And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. Oh, what a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas from already. Of course, tonight I'm joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, no reply at all. Mm-hmm. No reply at all. The government's response on the whole drone issue is still stunningly silent, and yet there has been a shift. They've gone from saying, well, this was a nothing burger. No, there are no illegal incursions. As a matter of fact, they're all just misidentifications to, you can't fly a drone in New Jersey or else you'll be subject to deadly force and taking it down. Well, that's a pretty big change in just a week. We're going to get into some of these changes that the states are making suddenly on the drone issue and protecting environments like the airports and all the rest. Of course, this is an after effect of their total silence and blockade around this story and the strange mystery of the drone swarms that have been happening and the number of distractions that they've rolled out there, the stonewalling in general, and just holding that back. We're going to get into it tonight. Tonight's a very important episode. It's a direct attachment to the last episode. That was Apotheum Nation. This one's Apotheum Nation 2, and it's Apotheum Nation 2 NORTHCOM COG UFO file. This is crucial, and it follows up on the pleasure that I had this week to host the Alex Jones Show. That was a blast, let me tell you. And there were so many great responses, and what a pleasure it was to bring forward this information on that network. And one of the things I've mentioned before is that I consider Alex to be kind of an architect of the independent media, and to be able to bring in the edge of the X series Dark Journalist topics in that environment is that just that crucial combination of deep state knowledge on one hand and then bringing in the kind of UFO file esoteric side. And we had so many great responses on it. I really want to say everyone was generous, because the week before I did an interview, of course, with Alex that was a blast. And this time it was just like, hey, you know, get in there and do the show yourself. It was a great blast. We went all over COG NORTHCOM, and the last, I think we had 4.2 million listeners on that show. What an incredible thing. And so many of you from the Ideas Room were there. And for those from the Alex Show who are in the audience tonight, it's great to have you here with us. Mm-hmm. But before I go any further, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
Well, Switch 5000 says DJ's guest hosting for Alex Jones was absolutely as good as it gets. Outstanding, densely packed with content, and started right on the button.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. And you know, one of the key things that we realize is there are times when you can study in a particular area. For example, let's suppose you were studying the lost continent of Atlantis and just going deep on all the information that's been put out there on the mystery school side, on the scientific side, on the archaeological side, and all the tremendous gaps on that archaeological picture that we've had people, you know, puncture that kind of bubble of fantasy that Egyptologists put in place in terms of dating. And that dating actually goes back into the 19th century and has no relation to reality at all. Of course, the tools have increased dramatically, things like LIDAR and all the rest. So, but it's interesting. You can study, let's say you study along this line for a decade, and then all of a sudden the conditions on the outside world crisscross with the research that you've been doing. This is a lot of that's been happening with us here in the X series with the work that we do. And I consider that in great part these kind of ripples that come directly out of the Ideas Room, because when we involve ourselves and engage in that, it sends a ripple out. So you might have this one lone outpost, for example, with what we're doing, getting into NORTHCOM, getting into the continuity of government, how that plays into the UFO file. And then you could have somebody in the background who did 40 years of research around it, like Professor Peter Dale Scott, who had a great influence on me, you know, and I would carry around his deep state books in college. This stuff, you know, stayed with me, but it formed layers in my mind of understanding. And it took a while, you know, and I was thinking of that when I was hosting the Alex Show, because I'd learned so much, of course, listening to Alex over the year as well. And he was so far, you know, ahead of the pack on a number of things, from 9/11 to Operation Northwoods and the financial coup and all these other matters, that I realized, oh, isn't it interesting? Like, so much of that information is caught up. And now when I think about the things that we've laid out on the X series here over time, things are starting to, on the outside piece, they're starting to catch up. They're starting to see, you know, NORTHCOM, the UFO file, the Central Intelligence Agency false UFO narrative. Now there's something out there about that. Before that, you know, the intelligence agencies were walking all over the UFO community, and all of those authors who had really been starved of, you know, any kind of legitimate contracts or anything like that, they actually went on board with this whole thing around intelligence. I mean, you had all these counterintelligence people coming out. I expected to see, oh, all these UFO researchers are going to throw them under the bus and say, the CIA doesn't run UFO disclosure. The CIA are inveterate liars. Well, no. And instead, they were waving flags like, hey, we're going to get our own Netflix series. Come on. So that was, you know, there's a learning curve. Even if you're a dark journalist, there's a learning curve when you get around these things. But it's quite fascinating because we're in a very interesting battle here where they're trying to prep the narrative one way and we are providing that shock on the other side. And that's right where we need to be. And I was thinking, you know, with Alex stuff, he calls InfoWars the tip of the spear. And I think that that's a good way to look at the information as a whole and in general, and people who put their great trust in that kind of independent media tend to get a much better payoff in terms of the truth than trusting any kind of mainstream media sources. And we'll see how the mainstream now is trying to co-opt the independent media side. So we're getting a lot of that and a lot of very superficial treatment of very deep, deep issues. And so it's why on this show I emphasize how information can be potent and how it's that potent information that's going to guide things and separate, you know, just the kind of clickbait idea of the media. You know, we have those thumbnails. We were just talking about this, where people's mouths are wide open. And it's like, oh my God, the CIA gives you UFO truth. And there's a guy there with his mouth wide open. You know, we need to kind of graduate out of that. There's been a lot of media forces and money poured into the space now. And so the more we sift through it, you know, the more we bring in those rules, I call them the rules of dark journalism, which are, it's kind of a helpful aid, which is there's the official story, you know, 19 hijackers hijacked the entire U.S. air defense system during 9/11, and a guy in a cave was directing them. You know, that's the official story of 9/11. Then you have underneath that would be the secondary story, what the media calls the conspiracy theory, which is brought forward usually by thoughtful researchers, professors, authors, and they try to disparage that whole thing. But then underneath that is the third force, and we've been seeing a lot of that third force action. That's the junk conspiracy. You know, that's the whole, when you get around deep events in history, like the JFK assassination, the driver did it, you know, things like that. You know, you have to watch out for the junk conspiracy because it's put out by the same people who are putting out the official narrative. What they're trying to do is knock out that middle piece because, as the late Jim Mars taught me during our long conversations, obfuscation is the best weapon that these institutions have. And in the NORTHCOM role in this whole drone swarm rollout, I'm going to explain that tonight and get very deep into the continuity of government program and the UFO file directive inside of that program. No one talks about that, but we're going to talk about it here tonight. That is the blue UFO file. We'll get into all that tonight. We're going to go about an hour and a half with you here tonight in this special report, Apotheum Nation 2. And of course, that is the NORTHCOM COG UFO file. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
Mike Rotunda says, yes, we ain't playing around tonight. We're going deep.
Absolutely. What else? You can follow up on that.
Keep going. Christina Mystic says, DJ's voice is so needed right now.
Oh,
and Joe
it.
Says, DJ, the info warrior. Yeshua Emmanuel says, it's funny how far in advance DJ was with all this, LOL. And Wasala Dream says, oh boy, can't wait for another in-depth adventure. DJ always delivers.
Fantastic. Well, it's great to have you all here. And of course, I consider this kind of symbiotic, synchronistic thing that happens with the Ideas Room to be a crucial aspect of what we do here on the show. One of the things I want to say in relation to this is when you get into it from the perspective of the way that we view these things, what I can tell you from doing deep research along the matters of psychic experience, ancient cultures, ancient technology, advanced technology, the UFO file, the deep state, what happens is you don't need fantasy. You don't need fiction when you get around these things. They are so deep. And when we've had, major networks and things like Gaia TV and stuff, and they create all this fiction around super soldiers and all this other stuff, and generally like ripping off myself and other researchers to do it, they don't need to create fantasy scenarios. The truth is so incredibly out there that if you just do the research, you'll have enough material for so many shows. And I would say in terms of the X-steganography, which is the foundation of this series, in terms of that information, I've probably brought out about 20% of what I've researched on it. So there's that, it's that whole expanse of the information. When you think about it in terms of the different subjects that you'll go into, whether it's the mystery schools and the deep knowledge, the esoteric knowledge that's contained there and how that relates, since it goes back into history, how does that relate in the 21st century? There's so much information. And there's so many exciting and really kind of, I would almost call them bizarre conclusions that we can come to that are really world-changing and also quite exciting. But they don't require any, imagination or fiction or anything because they're just that incredible, the facts themselves. And that's what we try to bring forward tonight. I'm going to show you where the original roots of the UFO file, some of those original stories like Kenneth Arnold and like the Kecksburg incident and others, even Roswell itself, plays in directly to this creation in the background of an emergency group that was set up to deal with massive emergencies and how that continuity of government group, which was originally set up by Eisenhower and Truman to survive a nuclear conflagration, that kind of disaster. And they said, well, now that we have these weapons and the Russians have them, we need to create this gigantic network of underground tunnels. And you got the incredible expanse of the highway system during the Eisenhower period. On the top, we had the highways being built underneath the underground bases. And that government, though, got less and less oversight as time went by. And so the continuity of government group became ultra secret, but also the UFO file research X-Protect group became ultra secret. Those two factors merge in that shadowy corridor between aerospace and the intelligence agencies. That's the place where we can get the biggest answers around these questions. And we're right on the cusp, I would say, with all the changes that have taken place, the election, the announcement of a more transparent government from the incoming administration. We're right on the cusp of opening up a number of these things. And so what I want to do with these reports is give the public the tools of the knowledge around what those secret programs contained and what the names of those groups are. Now, I want to mention this about Blue, which is a program that was deep in the government and that continues to this day, and it exists directly underneath this continuity of government program, but it is the aspect that handles the UFO file, and it's been in existence since the 1940s. Blue is very important because all the references around the UFO file, like Blue Book, like Blue Beam, like Blue Gemini, the program under the Kennedy administration, all dealing with the UFO file, there's a reason for that. And when I put out this information in 2023, in May of 2023, and then followed up on it with a documentary called Blue about the UFO file and JFK's handling of it in that period, and how the secret space program, all these things came out of that Blue aspect. And there's a lot of reasons why the term Blue was used. You know, if you go into esoteric doctrine, there's a lot about the blue rooms. And then in Masonic doctrines, of course, there's the blue degrees. And they did, in fact, employ for the UFO file all the secrecy techniques learned under Masonic ways over the decades and over the centuries. And it's interesting because the people who really launched that UFO file in the 20th century, like Vannevar Bush and others, they were the Master Masons. He was the Master Mason of the MIT Lodge, and that was the ultra-secret branch that also contained John Trump. Now, when you go into that, you have to see that there's this direct correlation into the continuity of government group. And I'm going to explain how there's three divisions in the continuity of government group, and that they're different troop divisions with different specialties. And one of those groups is blue. There's blue, gray, and orange. Those are the three different groups, and they have three different jobs when there is emergency powers invoked in lieu of an emergency. I'm going to show you how WikiLeaks plays into this, because a major piece around WikiLeaks came through the documents and were released in 2008. This sent so many ripples through that machine, and people felt, well, you know, Assange got into trouble, of course, around the Chelsea Manning affair and other pieces where they really prosecuted him. It's very interesting to note that he released a major trove of directives of the Continuity of Government program in 2008. I'm going to read from some of those tonight. We're going to put that all together. I wanted to mention one other thing in terms of all the responses that we got from hosting the Alex Jones Show. You know, I could say this, that there's so many questions that came out of that about how does the UFO file aspect relate to the drone swarm part. And I think it is very important. One thing I want to point out, and I don't point it out with any malice, but I think the independent media, while the mainstream media was doing the whitewash around the whole thing, the independent media seemed out of their center, and they had problems processing this. So they kept putting it back to the public being wrong and witnesses being wrong, and, oh, they were just seeing airplanes. And you had a lot of really high-profile people around the independent side doing this, and I thought, this is strange, because it's very obvious to anyone who's an investigator that this was a major change of protocol. We have never seen anything like the drone swarms. And the first introduction to this kind of thing, in fact, took place in 2023 with the Chinese balloon incursion, which also we had never seen anything the likes of before, because we have an air defense system that literally does not allow for those types of things. So I wondered what the problem was fundamentally on this. What I'm going to do is show you some versions of drones tonight from Terra Systems. And these drones are large and like the descriptions of what you hear about in New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and other places. And they do look like planes, you know, and but they're different. And, you know, the sound of a plane, the whole thing, the whole environment is different. So when people were saying, I'm seeing these unusual things, it looks like an SUV flying over my house, I noted on Alex's show that Judge Napolitano had come out, and of course he's the libertarian judge who we've quoted on this program in relation to his conversation with Trump over the JFK files and other stories. But he went on the air a couple of days ago and said, look, I have a farm in New Jersey. You know, these things were over my house. And as a matter of fact, when I was out looking at them, they seemed to hover and look back. I mean, that's unusual. Chris Christie, you know, no guardian of truth, no paragon of virtue. Mm-hmm. However, he does know New Jersey because he's the governor there for so many years. And he said, no, you know, what Mayorkas has said, the Homeland Security director, is complete and utter BS. That there was nothing unusual going on. And as we know, that story fell apart, and now they're saying, oh, we have all these new defenses for this. Something very, very strange in relation to this. There's three or four different explanations. What I want to do first, though, is establish the fact that the people who are trying to throw the story out were completely wrong. They're just wrong. And the mainstream media blocking the story with the support of Mayorkas and the Pentagon and stuff, it's just wrong. It's misinformation on the public. It's keeping the public in the dark, very much like they did with the UFO file for 80 years. And now they have the phony CIA narrative co-opting it because you have a UFO threat narrative. That's still not the truth either. So, you know, what we want is the truth. We don't want the false disclosure and we don't want the wall of secrecy, Stonewall. We want the real deal. You have to go right down the middle for that. And you have to avoid on one side all of the intel manipulation of the whole thing and then all the marketing stuff on the other side. So the thing that I noticed was that, you know, there were too many outlets reporting, hey, the witnesses are all wrong. It's absurd, you know. These are hundreds of people who've lived, thousands of people who've lived in these communities. They know the difference between planes. We've all experienced planes for years. So, no, the witnesses were correct. You know, do you mean once in a while you might have a misidentification? Of course. But no, the majority of witnesses were telling us on the ground about these drones. And by the way, there are drones spotted here in Massachusetts now over Natick, Mass. How far is Natick? Now, 20 miles here from us here in Cambridge. You also had them in Salem. I've been getting videos sent to me from people filming videos of these drones in Salem. There's no question that there's a wave that is going all along the East Coast and now showing up complementary to UFO sightings in Oregon, California, and Texas. There's just no doubt about it. Those reports are solid and on the ground. There's something very, very unusual going on, and we're going to get into exactly what that is tonight in our X-Series special report. This is Apotheum Nation 2, the NORTHCOM COG UFO file, and it's a follow-up on last week's Apotheum Nation X-Series 181 episode and everything I was talking about yesterday on the Alex Jones Show. Miss Olivia, what do you got there for temperature?
Wayshowers says, question, can DJ comment on Elizondo's take on the drones?
You know, I want to mention this first about Elizondo, which is they've tried to position him in a variety of ways. Now he's the drone authority. And he keeps inserting his CIA UFO threat talking points when these people bring him out. Look, Lou Elizondo is a CIA DIA counterintelligence agent, and he claimed to be a whistleblower who quit his job at the office of the Undersecretary of Defense because they weren't taking the subject of UFOs seriously. That story came out in the New York Times and was accompanied by this whole Black Projects UFO story, and it claimed that they had these videos and, you know, this sad whistleblower was standing up for humanity and all this stuff. Lou, as I proved on this program, never left the government. He continued to work for the government. Now he openly admits it. As a matter of fact, he's like, oh, yeah, I was working at Space Force. You know, so the idea of him being a whistleblower who came out and told the UFO truth and, you know, they rolled him out before Congress, he's been caught lying in public so many times that I don't take anything that he says. You know, he's part of the Chris Mellon DOD billionaire operation to create a false CIA UFO threat. And when we've interacted with those people pointing things out, you know, at times they freaked out online being like, that's totally wrong, you know. And Chris Mellon, from his lofty position, came out on X Twitter, you know, trying to say that he wasn't trying to control the UFO whistleblowers. And we had put on the record, you know, that he had, in fact, instructed one of those whistleblowers specifically, who told me that Chris Mellon says, I shouldn't go near you or go on your show. Absolutely not. It's because none of those people want to be asked the real questions, which is, are you still working for the government? Are you a counterintelligence agent? And if you're a counterintelligence agent, your job basically is to lie for the government, which I can understand in a national security context, but I don't want it around the UFO file. And so that whole, you know, we've been at odds since they rolled out those phony CIA false UFO threat whistleblowers. But make no mistake about it, it's DOD billionaire Chris Mellon who's behind Elizondo. So, you know, Elizondo may have been a good counterintelligence agent. What I've, you know, I mean, even in his own book, we know that he was an interrogator and did all this kind of stuff. I'm sure he did that great for the government, but he's not somebody who would tell the truth about the UFO file, not at all. And he has misled the public on so many public occasions, you know, out in the open, that I'm surprised anyone could even take the guy seriously, ever, you know. So, you know, good luck to him, but I don't want him anywhere near the UFO file, and I don't take anything that he has to say as a CIA agent about the UFO file as truth. As a matter of fact, if you understood the program of the Central Intelligence Agency and their misinformation efforts to the public around this, you know, they're the last people you would go to for UFO disclosure, interestingly enough. All right, so we only have a limited time here. What I'm going to do before we get into the NORTHCOM COG thing is to get us oriented to some very important early cases in the UFO file and open this whole thing up. In the second half of tonight's program, we're going to take your questions. And Miss Olivia is putting those together. Now you can ask those questions related to all the subjects we're talking about, and we'll get to those, say, in the last half hour of the show. What do you got there?
Well, many, many people are talking about Dr. Stephen Greer also, and they want to know your take on him and what he's had to say about the drones this week.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, Greer has a lot more credibility than Elizondo, make no mistake about it. And Greer knows that that's a false CIA UFO threat that the Mellon Elizondo group is pushing. And I think through having people on like John Warner, who we've had on this program many times, who's the son of Catherine Mellon and John Warner Sr., the senator from Virginia, the late senator, you know, Greer's had some genuine good people, I think, come forward. And he's conducted a lot of very important interviews over the years relating to the UFO file. There are aspects around Greer's stuff that get into other areas of kind of a supermarketing guru type things that don't, you know, that's not an area that I can really speak to much in terms of what the kind of things that he promotes in that arena or CE5 or any of that stuff. But I can just tell you, at least he understands the deep state influence on the UFO file. And, you know, I guess there's imperfections whenever you get around a particular field. So, but those press conferences and things where he's brought forward people, I think are valuable. So there's some value in the work.
Can I make a comment here?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think what we get are similar questions every show. And what people want are like the Cliff's Notes version that they can trust. You know, because there's so, ufology is, what do we have, 70 plus 80 years?
Yes.
You know, and, you know, it's immense. Even the experts disagree with each other.
There's no question. It's hard to summarize. One thing that you can do, though, is anyone who is involved deeply on the CIA side, you know, and that includes the umbrella around that, NGA, NRO, CIA, it's honeycombed with this whole disinformation piece. That's just a fact. But if you get around a counterintelligence agent in relation to the UFO file, it's not, it's good. You know, if somebody really was kind of on the run because they had put this information out, the entire environment around it would be different. You know, you don't get a TV show for that kind of a thing. But no, I agree with you, though. It's hard. It is a hard thing to summarize. There's no question about it. Let's talk about Kenneth Arnold. He wasn't involved with any intelligence agency. He was a pilot. As a matter of fact, he was a pilot selling to other air groups this idea of insurance around fire insurance for planes that caught fire and things of this nature. Well, it's quite interesting. He heard back there in 1947, and this is where the wave took off of UFO sightings. But even before Roswell, on June 26, 1947, he was flying over Mount Rainier because he had heard of a convoy that had gone down, and there was actually a reward because they felt, well, you know, these Marines who went down there, they might still be alive, even though their plane disappeared. And so he actually took up the challenge to go out there and find them. What he encountered instead was this incredible wave, and this was a guy who, you know, was a pilot and knew kind of the basics around all the things that we had available for flight at the time. And the craft that he saw and that he described were so unusual, and they moved in such fast formation, that he was completely, say, freaked out at the pilot's wheel. And when he got down in Pendleton, Oregon, in the air base there, he was talking about it, and there happened to be a news person who was close by who overheard him, who said, maybe I can get you on the record. Now, this was such a random occurrence in the way that it happened that there's no, like, setup of a intel op around flying saucers. This was a pilot who was looking for something and encountered something else, and then in spilling it, you know, his story got exploited a little bit. But I think the story of Arnold gives us so many clues because it includes the Men in Black aspect immediately. It includes the apotheum aspect, which is something that is, you know, we put on the record here. I've done documentaries on apotheum. I coined the term, and it represents the unusual effects that take place, a distortion physics that takes place in the presence of the UFO file or in the presence of X technology. So, a quick comparison would be, you know, for example, some of the unusual effects that take place around UFO sightings, like missing time or, you know, people walking through objects and things of this nature, also take place around things like Nikola Tesla's experiments on a very top secret level. So that X technology then resides inside of that wider UFO file. The apotheum effects are what the groups who are studying it are trying to protect. That is the highest national security secret, the UFO file, in the United States government. And I cite him often because he doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, but it's physicist Robert Sarbarker, who really got wiped from history there. But he was the one who came out and talked about it and said, oh, I always figured that they would come out and talk about this, you know, like, when these UFO researchers caught up with him in the 1980s, they said, you made some statements back here in the 50s about the UFO file and its secrecy level. Can you open up about it? And he said, oh, yeah, well, I worked on that program. But, you know, Vannevar Bush was in charge of the UFO file, and we redeveloped and tried to re-engineer some of the crashed craft. And we did. We found beings inside, you know, and that the beings were like insects. Somebody had built these beings probably to withstand the incredible G-forces that would happen with the speed of these craft. And he said, I'm surprised this never came out. Well, it's interesting to note that he gave a couple of interviews like this in the 80s. And then he was getting into his car one day. And he lived actually here in Cambridge. This incident happened in Florida. But when he went to get into his car, there was a jelly-like substance on the door handle. And he felt weird immediately when he was driving. And the last thing that we know is that he called up his son and said, I'm having heart pains. I had all this jelly on my door when I was getting in, and I felt weird ever since. And he died shortly after that. And there were UFO researchers like Wendell Stevens in the era who felt that he had been taken out as a result of explaining all these things to a very rogue UFO researcher. I keep his book back here, UFO Crash at Aztec, Bill Steinman. And in that book are the statements by Sarbarker. So we know that this thing had been moving through the government, and we know that there were a number of people involved in the redevelopment process, but it was so ultra secret that it was a higher secret than the nuclear bomb. So that's where the level of secrecy sits. And there's so many scientists and side stories about it, but your final conclusion is this thing operates on that super secret level. And the reason, based on my own research, is this apotheum effect, which distorts time and space and really is a reality distortion physics. And the problem with it, I think, in terms of the deep forces inside of that national security state structure are that, you know, the ability to perfectly aim this thing is not quite what it should be at this point. And I'll have some examples for you on that. But Kenneth Arnold's story is very interesting, but that's just the beginning of what he had to say and the encountering those craft. I also want to mention a couple of things about the stories at the time. This is how it all started. This is the first story. It came out of Pendleton, Oregon, and it was a Boise businessman reports sighting saucer-like objects over Cascades. June 26, a tale of nine mysterious objects big as airplanes whizzing over western Washington at 1,200 miles an hour got skepticism today from the Army and air experts. The man who reported the objects, Kenneth Arnold, a flying Boise, Idaho businessman, clung, however, to his story of the shiny, flat objects, such as the big DC-4 passenger plane racing over Washington's Cascade Mountains with a peculiar weaving motion like the tail of a kite. Later, he would say, it was like skipping a saucer across the pond, the way they moved. And that's where they got the whole term from. In fact, what's unusual is you'll find him describing the look of them as they're not actually saucers. I'm going to show you that in the middle. That's the original story that got all this going. And the craft themselves are unusual. This is an artist depiction. And, of course, he drew the craft on a number of different occasions. These are the craft. This is the wave that he saw. So you can imagine you're out there, you're a pilot, and you see this group of objects. I mean, this is not just one object. And they are unusually shaped, and they move strange, but they're going incredibly fast. And he figured out how to calculate the speed and figured it was somewhere around 1,200 miles an hour. What I found interesting was later, 1970, he gave an interview, and he said, you know, they've kept the secrecy throughout the Air Force and all these things. And he was actually surprised that the field itself hadn't grown since he had put the story out. But he said, flying saucer is a misnomer of sorts, said Arnold. Most of these objects are RAF shaped. They look something like the axes that were used to behead people back in the Middle Ages. This I found very interesting because, I don't know about you, but RAF shape, this is not something I was familiar with. Ultimately, people who are dealing with sails and things of that nature and understand the water will realize that it's basically a triangular sail that sits on top of a square sail. And I got some images around this. Let's see if that shows up. Well, we get maybe... No, it doesn't show up that much. But you get the idea generally. Flying triangles. And this is going to be important because one of the things that I can connect the current COG NORTHCOM commander, Gregory Gio, to is a major event at Fort MacDill Air Force Base having to do with triangle UFOs. Mm. And this is another thing that I think is new and that is something that we should all be aware of, which is that the people who command these different ultra-secret organizations that hang out in Cheyenne Mountain and figure out how to survive a nuclear disaster and how to rebuild society and all these different things that would happen as a result, they have to go into a kind of a different, strange mentality. You know, it's like the Dr. Strangelove thing. We're going to repopulate the Earth and, you know, how would we do all this? And we rebuild after nuclear disaster and 100 years where nothing will grow. And all of these bizarre things, they go through a whole training program of that and they simulate the entire experience. Now, what I found interesting is around the time that Terrence O'Shaughnessy, who was the COG commander during the COVID operation, handed the reins over to General Van Herk, who became the leader of NORAD, NORTHCOM, and the COG Combatant Commander of America. It's quite fascinating because Van Herk had a UFO signature in his background that was major, which is that he was part of the 509th group. And of course, the 509th group goes all the way back to the Roswell incident. Well, Van Herk was too young to go that far back, but he was still part of the same legacy of the unit. Later, when I looked into other commanders like Chance Saltzman, who leads the Space Force currently, General Saltzman is very interesting because he spent almost a decade at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. Well, Malmstrom is where, you know, the UFOs hovered over the base and shut off the nuclear missiles. So he kept coming up with these different UFO signatures. And by the time we get to Gregory Guillo, who is the current COG NORTHCOM NORAD commander, he has all the background because he comes out of Fort MacDill. And I have some very interesting stories that came forward based on WikiLeaks again about Fort MacDill and what they were doing at Fort MacDill, tracking UFOs off the coast of the hot zone directly in Florida. So we get into deep territory with these guys all having this UFO expertise, and there's a reason for that. I'm going to get into that in this special episode. Everyone, this is Dark Journalist Apotheum Nation 2 Special Report, the NORTHCOM COG UFO file. We're going to take your questions in the second half of tonight's program. And I want to mention to you, if you're new here especially, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's a free newsletter. And what it does is it keeps us in touch with each other without all the incredible censorship like we experience on YouTube and Google. I mean, it's become bizarre. And, you know, I'm somebody who has a tech background, so I've been able to have experts look at it and stuff. And it is out and out, like, censor this guy and his material. But the way we get around all that is the newsletter, and that's free, and it lets you know about the incredible interviews that we have coming up with you, mind-blowing interviews coming up even in January. X-Series episodes that will blow your mind, and our special documentaries. We have a special documentary up there right now, JFK, The Final Speech, about him going to meet with physicist and the head of the Robertson UFO panel, Lloyd Berkner. It's history-making. And we put so much in there. It is the Antarctica UFO file directly related in the Kennedy story. And I've put that documentary up there on this channel for free for you to get the whole story there. That's all available, but it's all in the newsletter. So go to darkjournalist.com right now and sign up for that newsletter. If you're new and if you haven't had the time to get on that list, get on there, because I'm going to send you that information. And this is the information that's going to be vital coming forward, and you'll learn all about it there. And it literally takes, you know, a minute to sign up, and you will also, you know, just get the newsletter once a week. It's not a lot of marketing. It's and we don't share your email. So that's very important. Okay, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
Okay, Christine Laurel says, my first impression when watching drone videos was of seeing projections or holographic images. Does DJ think that's possible? And Sammy is asking, why would these drones only come out at night?
Classically, drones don't even fly at night. This is the interesting thing there. They have certainly projection technology that has to do with holograms and things, but these things were definitely visual on a level. And when people are filming them and you're looking at them, you're looking at solid objects. There's no question about it. Oddly enough, I will say this, because there was a certain point during the story where I was like, why aren't the UFO crowd, why aren't they more tuned into what's going on this? I don't get it. And there was sort of like a weird competition, like, hey, you know, don't give the drones all that attention. We're into all these UFO, UAP stories. And of course, UAP being that disposable name that they use for UFOs. Look, UFO describes it quite well. You know, UAP is a establishment CIA creation. But what's interesting to me about this is quite fascinating, because, you know, there were, in the drone incursion reports, there was a mix, certainly, because you had the stories that came out, but we always have stories about UFOs. This is the thing. It is a serious issue which is not addressed, and that the public has no idea how the government actually addresses it. And that's very important. One of the things I noted, and someone actually sent me a video of, was a couple that was in New Jersey, and there are a number of these incidents, in fact, but when they were looking at the drones, they lost time, and they reported that to a local TV station. The losing time, missing time aspect is a direct result of the apotheum effect, which comes directly out of that UFO sighting experience. And there's so many numerous cases, we don't even You know, it's not a question anymore. This is what happens when people encounter these things. A number of things happen if you really track it, which get quite fascinating, which is, you know, lightning will show up out of nowhere, for example, or the grid goes down in that area. You know, cars stop, and there are all these malfunctions. There are a lot of strange malfunctions around the drones in New Jersey, if you follow those stories. One of those malfunctions had to do with the radio and strange things coming through the radio. Another strange wave that was involved with this were these people who experienced the missing time. And then beyond that, they had all kinds of electrical issues. Then we had, immediately after that, in these different towns, blinking lights. And, you know, Walmart parking lot, the lights just blink for 45 minutes. So there's some kind of grid interference that you usually ascribe, you know, I would usually ascribe to these UFO encounters, that's coming off the drone experience. And people also experiencing physical issues, disorientation, things of this nature, become disoriented just by watching and viewing the drones. That I found interesting. Because it tells me there may be an experimental aspect that's re-engineered directly out of this UFO re-engineering that's included in the advanced drone technology. And that could be part of why those reports, you know, came out this way. I want to show a couple of images of these tarot drones so that, as I started off the show with, we can once and for all say, no, the witnesses were correct and that, you know, the media people and the independent media people who were saying the witnesses are misidentifying are totally wrong. This is from Tarot Systems. I'll show you a couple of these craft. This is very interesting because it's the XP4-3. And if you know anything about the X-steganography involved in advanced craft that we've covered on this program, you know the X involves the idea that they have a secret technology deep inside. It's a reflection of it. They just include it in there. It doesn't represent experimental. It represents the advanced tech. And the steganography of naming things X is how they were able to move them through various government agencies without everyone knowing what was going on. But that's the drone there. And you could see if that was in the sky, you know, It's the idea when they tape these things at night and they record them off their iPhone or whatever, and people are like, those are just planes or whatever. Look, a lot of these drones look like planes. There's no question about it. But people can tell the difference. And it's very important for us to realize, no, look at this. This looks, it does. It looks like a plane. So the idea that, oh, you know, all those videos, they're just planes. No, they're drones that look like planes. All right. Not all of them, but, I mean, take a look at that. Could you tell the difference, you know, as just a novice at night looking at that? I mean, it's a drone that looks like a plane. So let's be clear about it, that people were seeing drones everywhere, and then the drones that look like a plane are just part of that. People see planes all the time. They do not misidentify drones for planes. These drones look like planes, which is why they can be called out in these videos, and people will say, oh, that's nothing. And it's just, remember they were trying to spread this term around for a little while. They were like, it's public hysteria. Boy, does that, you can go back to the 1960s and 50s on that with the UFO file. They tried to make that up for everyone who was seeing, you know, there were waves in Michigan, for example. And I've opened up stories here about Gerald Ford calling a UFO Congress in to check out what was going on. That's where we get the whole thing about swamp gas. And I mean, the government will tell you anything to get you off the trail. There's no question about it. This is the breakaway technology they're building in the background. That's the X-37B. And this has to be understood that these are all connected, the advances on the air and space side. And when we understand aerospace and we understand what they're doing in the skies in low Earth orbit, in space, and right in our local skies, when we understand the combination of how they control those areas and how the goal of that space grid is from space to control things on the ground, things become much more simple and easy to manage. I also want to say that you know, all the declarations by the government and the media saying, oh, they're not able to identify this and that. they have rules around drones that if you don't have a register ID and you don't flash it, the FAA takes you down. They have ways of taking down drones that they're not all shooting them down. They can just frustrate their flight patterns. They can do all kinds of things. They have systems set up for that. And I've read about them for years. And I'm, you know, I'm not a pilot, but I know about them. So the idea that they would play this off to the public, I think, is really dramatic in terms of how they think about our intelligence and what we'll accept, as it were. So there's no question that there were drones that were flying and that the explanations about them and what they were completely false. And the idea that the government didn't know was also false. And that is something, and it's funny because when I was hosting Alex's show, Alex popped in even though he was on a trip, and he said, what do you think about the change in the tone after Trump came out and said the government knows where the drones are coming from? And it is true. You started to see a crack in the ice in the reporting from the government side. And they weren't exactly saying the truth. They're still not saying the truth, but they were starting to say, well, you know, we know what they are, but they're operating lawfully, you know, which is completely false. But nonetheless, it was a shift. And I think that Alex, with all of his years of looking at misinformation around this, he caught the shift in the conversation, which I think is important. And I will also say that for Alex and the work he does at InfoWars, when I was on there and we were talking about it, he understood directly the relationship between the UFO file threat and the drone swarms. That's very important because, you know, there's a lot of these things that kick around on the independent side, and this is really bad news because the mainstream media you expect it from. But when the independent media drops the ball on a major story like this, and it's just like, oh, you have witness hysteria from planes, that's bad. That's bad because it shows that if they can't lock in with a story, if they don't have the background, and this is a major deficiency in independent media circles, top to bottom, even if you have like a big media figure, like someone like Tucker Carlson, you know, he thinks having Lou Elizondo on speed dial is understanding the UFO file, you know. No, Elizondo is a counterintelligence CIA agent who's a known liar in public. So, you know, we have to get real about there's two lines here. Just to accept the idea of UFOs isn't enough. You have to get away from the false threat UFO narrative. You have to get to the real truth. You get to the real truth by going directly into that UFO file information, which is publicly available. There's so much of it that's available. We've made it available on this show. But there are researchers, you know, who lived and died trying to solve these things and put things on the record. That's the direction of the research and where it should go. This other thing, you know, the CIA backdoor and letting all these counterintelligence people come on these shows and paint this false UFO threat version is very dangerous. And it becomes dangerous in terms of looking at the continuity of government NORTHCOM plans to activate an emergency takeover and emergency powers based on some disaster that takes place, some emergency that's going on. And I'm going to show you how a UFO file threat, a UFO threat, is part of the plan for the activation of those emergency powers. Now, I can tell you that there are a number of things that the government has worked on and that where they have seized emergency powers. Of course, they seized dramatic emergency powers during COVID, so we don't need to imagine much in terms of what they would do and the types of rights that they would take away, et cetera. But I do believe that the thing that they're planning in the background is so much larger than even the COVID operation. It's on such a scale because the leadership groups and the groups behind them don't have the popularity to govern. And this is a major problem. This is why you're seeing people like Trudeau about to be thrown out and stuff. They simply do not. And the only way they can get things done in their governments, and I like to point to Macron in relation to this, is just to call in emergency powers. That's what you saw Governor Newsom do with the bird flu thing this week. And it's a dramatic turn. He's somebody who during COVID said, hey, I can call martial law anytime I want. No, you can't. And so we have legitimate emergency authorities. But the public needs to have some window into this wider world. When you get into technologies, the exotic aerospace technologies, and then you have groups like NORTHCOM now married to NORAD, which is something that only took place after 9/11, you're in a different historical aspect. Now you have a group that where the centralization of power is too dramatic. And what they've been able to do over the years is develop that whole thing in secret as a secret system of underground bunkers, underground technology, and underground government. That is the continuity of government. And again, set up for very legitimate purposes in the beginning to survive a nuclear attack. But over the years, oddly enough, as we've pointed out in this program, through the deep events in history, that COG operation has come up more and more. And we're going to get into that by exploring General Guillo, who is the current COG commander, in this next segment. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. Whew, it is great to be here with you for the Sex Series special report, Apotheum Nation 2, NORTHCOM COG UFO file. A lot of information, and we're going to take your questions in the second half of the program. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia, you're at bat.
Okay, I've got a bundle. Pretty Good says, what about the theory that the drones had radiation detection hardware on them? David Donaway, drones might fly at night for low wind if they were tracking traces from suspected nuclear weapons and even using ultraviolet light to track trails or follow infrared signatures. And Mitakwe Oyasin, word is in circles that NATO sent some tactical nukes to the Ukraine. They ended up missing. Now they are using drones to see if they can identify the nuclear signature of them.
Yeah, there was a guy who came out, I think it's Saxon Aerospace, and he wanted to put all these things on the record. And he said, I knew this guy, and he had his hand on one of these nuclear warheads, and presumably in Ukraine, and that it was headed for the United States, and that the guy came back and tried to talk to Washington authorities, and they wouldn't talk to him, and that's he knows that this is what it is they're looking for and all that. Well, I'm glad that he went out there and put that on the record. The only problem is, you know, if this guy, his friend, really had his hand on one of the warheads and knew it was heading to America, I mean, why don't they have him before Congress now? And can you identify who the guy is? You know, there's too many, even if the guy's honest or whatever, there's too many ways that his story could be misinterpreted. And I agree with you, it's chilling. And there are scenarios where we need to track down things of this nature and to track stolen, you know, radiation materials and things. But also, this is a government that let in 17 million illegal immigrants. And they knew by opening that border, they opened us up to all sorts of threats along that line. So how serious could they really be about tracking anything? The official stories, and, you know, I think we'd like to come up with good excuses, but the government didn't say, hey, we're tracking, you know, we're looking for a nuke. That's just something, it's a figment of imagination right now. It's very possible that that's a scenario. But this guy from Saxon Aerospace coming out and saying it, you know, it's a drone company that he has, and he has some wisdom around that. And, you know, he's probably telling the truth about his story. But if you can't produce your friend who saw a nuclear warhead in Ukraine and knew it was headed for the U.S., I don't know. I mean, how the story kind of dies right there. You can't really do anything with it because, you know, even if I believe you, you know, you need to prove it to the public and you need to prove it to authorities in order to get that story going. And, you know, if you can't produce them, then it's just a nice story, right? We don't know why that story is out there. And I don't know if they're tracking nuclear material. I have no idea. But I can tell you that the denials on the part of the government are blank lies to the public. And also, there are people who have expertise. A number of them have come out who said, you don't use drones for nuclear sniffing at night. You know, and the way that the stories have broken. So you have that whole school of thought out there about it. So, no, I don't think it's very clear. What I do think, and there's another story that came out, by the way, a military intelligence story that Dick Russell put on the record. And, you know, Dick Russell is one of my favorite authors, but he's one of my favorite authors because he wrote The Man Who Knew Too Much, which was all about Richard Case Nagel. And he was the person who was deeply involved during the JFK assassination. He was hired, you know, he's sort of a triple agent. He was hired by these government agencies. He had, you know, pretended to defect to Russia and then defected back to America. All these different things that took place with him. A very interesting spy intrigue with this guy. But he was tracking the movements of Lee Harvey Oswald and for the CIA, for the KGB. You know, it was like this weird triple agent situation. And at a certain point, he realized, oh, this guy's going to be involved in the JFK assassination, either as a patsy or as an assassin, and I'm going to get blamed just for being around it. So he walked into a bank in San Antonio and shot off around into the ceiling and waited around for law enforcement to pick him up so he would be in prison. He'd be in jail during the whole incident. And when they grabbed him, now this is in September before the assassination, September 25th, Case Nagel had a false ID of Lee Harvey Oswald on him. It's very unusual story, in fact. He was put in jail for a short time for an attempt to rob a bank. But his story came out, and Dick Russell told the story, and Dick Russell has also written about RFK Jr., and you know, he's a lot of very interesting things. I've never seen him around the UFO file, so this was interesting to hear his input on it. I guess he has a book coming out about UFOs next year. But what he had to say is that this military intelligence person told him, you know, a trustworthy source told him there was a rogue group in the military that had stolen 16 drones. And that it was, the whole thing was involved with a plot in order to use the drones to assassinate President Trump. Now, there's a lot of stories that go around in relation to assassinations of the president and president-elect here. All I can tell you is, of course, there were two major attempts on President Trump, and they were both highly unexplained by official sources. They were highly suspicious, and they were obviously coordinated. Ryan Ruth, of course, and Thomas Matthew Crooks. So those deep state assassination attempts did not succeed. Was there a drone program around this? How does it explain this massive wave of drone stuff? Were they looking for missing drones? You see, those stories ping pong around, but Russell had said the military intelligence guy he got that from was a reliable source. So it's worth keeping it in the back of our head. The thing I will tell you that was taking place in November before the real swarm started was an operation by General Geo at NORTHCOM, and that operation was called Homeland Synchronizer. That's what we're going to get into next here on the Dark Journalist Show on the special report. This is Apotheum Nation 2, the NORTHCOM COG UFO file. Before I go any further, I want to mention to you, especially if you're new here, and if you saw my presentation yesterday on the Alex Jones Show, go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch. It's a direct pipeline around all the amazing censorship that we experience because of the cutting-edge information we present. And, you know, the way that works, you'll basically get an email once a week letting you know about the incredible interviews, X-series episodes, and documentaries that we have coming up. Of course, we have Hacking Atlantis, which is the documentary that goes really deep on the Casey aspect. And believe it or not, Atlantean technology comes up tonight because, of course, this is the Dark Journalist X-series. But that's all there, and so make sure when you go to darkjournalist.com to sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get information on the documentaries and things that we put out. The latest one, of course, is called JFK, The Final Speech, and that is the Antarctica UFO file connection. And what was happening, actually, when JFK was assassinated, he was headed where? The Dallas Trade Mart. Well, who was he going to talk to? He was going to talk to Lloyd Berkner, who's associated with the UFO file and had gone to Antarctica with Admiral Byrd. The deep factors that are involved there, all in that documentary. and that's there for you for free. That's the kind of information you get in that newsletter, so make sure you signed up. Now, before I go any further, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
Blazon River, could this be a test to see how much tech will be needed to actually pull off something like Bluebeam?
Yeah, it is. It's tremendous data mining. I mean, how much information did they get about just how people responded in the first place to all this? So, yes, absolutely. And, you know, Bluebeam, as it's the street legend about the idea that they would fake an alien invasion and use it as a way to have the UN come in and take control. But it always had legs in this regard, which is there were some factual aspects that someone inside of the UN heard this story. And one of the figures I'm going to point out tonight is James Woolsey, who was the CIA director under President Clinton. But one of the things that he was deep, deep involved in the 1980s, before the 90s with Clinton, was this setup of the COG piece. And what he did is he made Booz Allen Hamilton the CIA contractor, Intel community contractor, par excellence. He made them the top contractor for COG. Well, it's very interesting because he was involved later with a think tank designed by the Undersecretary of the Navy about how we would, you know, cope with the idea of ETs living among us. And they spent all these millions of dollars and hundreds of hours putting this together. Woolsey, as the Clinton CIA director, was right in the heart of that. And because, it's funny, they mentioned Greer earlier today. Mm-hmm. Someone came up with that question. Well, Greer had heard that Woolsey had a deep interest in the UFO file. And it's quite fascinating because Greer hunts down Woolsey. You know, he goes to these dinner parties and things, and he often speaks about, you know, oh, I briefed him on UFOs and gave him all this information. And what Woolsey, you know, writes a letter kind of dismantling this narrative a little bit and saying, he just approached me at this dinner party. He didn't brief me. I didn't ask for a briefing and all the rest. But obviously there was a crisscross there. The point is that Woolsey had this deep interest in the UFO file. Later, when all of these, you know, false CIA whistleblowers were coming forward during to Congress and all the rest, Woolsey comes forward and says, I know there's life out there and the UFOs are real. My friend's plane was stopped at 30,000 feet and just hung out in midair based on the fact that, you know, he had encountered this UFO. So this is his story now. Suddenly, John Brennan, CIA director, the drone king under Obama, he was like, oh, there's life on other planets. We need to admit it, you know. When I started seeing all these UFO people, you know, the CIA people getting into the UFO file, I knew we're in deep waters here. But it's interesting about Woolsey because I'm going to show how he's connected with the UFO aspect of COG and the fact that here he is, this connecting link, huge in COG in the 80s, then Clinton's director of CIA in the 90s, working in this think tank around how do we deal with ETs living among us, how the public react, and then coming out with all these stories in 2020. The kind of cherry on top, the icing on the cake with Woolsey, which I find hilarious, is that he wrote a book in 2020 during the pandemic called Operation Dragon, which was all about how the Russians killed JFK, not the CIA. Yeah, you know, you get the idea. But he's a deep, deep player in the COG UFO combination. That crisscross is something I'm introducing. I've been introducing it for a while. And this is the key thing we need to understand. NORTHCOM, COG, NORAD, the UFO file. Those things together, the activation of emergency powers through a UFO file threat. That's the deep part we're getting into tonight. Miss Olivia, what do you got?
G. Myers Gilmer. How does the United Airspace Security Safety and Security Reauthorization Act of 2024 and the FAA Reauthorization Act of 2018 that expires today sync? H.R. 8610 is insidious, already passed the House.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There are a lot of things going on around rules around drones. around the FAA. I'm going to read. I have a couple of these here tonight. And this is very interesting. What's happening out there is there's a lot of forces around the government that were trying to, and I mentioned Operation Homeland Synchronizer. I'm going to actually, as a way of answering your question, get into that piece right now. And that is the Gregory Gio aspect around this. So let's start off with this. You've got at NORTHCOM now, NORTHCOM was created artificially. We're run militarily by NORTHCOM in North America. Doesn't make any sense because for years, of course, we had Posse Comitatus, which said you can't have the feds running people on the ground. We had those rules after Reconstruction because of the problems that took place after the Civil War. And so there was an agreement that was made in relation to this, and the agreement still stands. It's the law of the land. But somehow NORTHCOM got in there. How did they get in there? Through emergency powers. And where did those come from? The September 11th attacks. Now, so many things came out of September 11th, but the architects of the continuity of government program were there, standing, waiting in the wings to flip the switch and activate COG, which on the record they did after 9/11. Now, 9/11 saw as Defense Secretary, Secretary Rumsfeld, and Defense Secretary, of course, our friend Cheney. When you see Liz Cheney being floated out there as this big anti-Trump, never-Trumper, it seems to be a bit of a stretch even beyond the fact of, you know, some animosity towards Trump or whatever. I mean, after all, isn't she a fellow Republican? Well, the never-Trumpers are very interesting because especially since her dad, Dick, was set up as the person who set up the 80s version and then updated it in 2007 of the continuity of government program, far expanding it beyond what it was, which was a program to survive in case the government was decapitated and you needed another government serving underground to fight during a nuclear war. Well, this thing expanded it dramatically. Suddenly they had powers to round up dissidents through MainScore, and they had a number of things where they expanded the bases, they expanded the powers of it, and they got rid of the oversight. This is the nature of the problem with the COG program. And it is also incredibly underreported. This is another aspect. That's either a deficit in knowledge or an intentional omission by the mainstream media. So one of the, since they were set up in the, you know, aftermath of the September 11th attacks and the emergency that was placed by President Bush, which is ratified every year, by the way, through the NDAA, every president has to sign on to that, whether it was Bush, Obama, Trump, or Biden. And Biden will sign on to it now in a couple of days. They sign on to that September 11th emergency. That emergency contains the COG powers. So, in fact, we live under COG as a result of every president renewing that emergency. We need to get rid of those emergency conditions and emergency powers out of the NDAA. And I want to make a note on this with the NDAA. That program, it controls $1 trillion of military defense spending. So if you try to interfere with it, there's so many people and so many interests involved that they scream, you're blocking all these funds for the military and all the rest. So by attaching the emergency to the NDAA, they guarantee that the president must sign it. Anytime they want to get something through, just attach it to NDAA. That's how they got AARO, which is the UFO Defense Office. This is the opening up of the idea of, oh, there's a UFO threat out there. We need billions of dollars to protect the people on the ground from it. Don't believe it for a minute. They've been studying the issue for a long time in the background, and they've developed a UFO threat. But this I found very interesting, the image that sits there in the front of NORTHCOM, and I put this up on my X feed earlier, which is one of the beams from the Twin Towers that was destroyed during September 11th, and then they put a globe around that beam. what I got from the symbolism there might be a little different from what they intended, but what I got basically was, as a result of us activating emergency powers, we now control the globe. And like I said, that image is available in my Twitter X feed if you want to go back and take a look at it. But I think it is a very compelling piece. All right, so I'm going to lay out some things here about Guillo and the UFO file. Then we're going to go back to Kenneth Arnold, believe it or not. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Dark Journalist Apotheum Nation 2, the Northcom COG file. Here we go. All right. Operation Homeland Synchronizer. What is it? It is a test that was being run by Gregory Guillo, the COG combatant commander, head of NORAD Northcom. And the test was all about these drone systems versus UAPs. So it's a simulation of a test, and it says, here, these drones come in, and these UAPs come in. How do they deal with each other? What happens? Who gets shot down? All the rest. They did it in the Southwest. They did it in Colorado. They did it in Canada. Immediately after Homeland Synchronizer got kicked off, you had all these strange drone sightings. The invasion of New Jersey, as it were, the skies of New Jersey and New York, and now spreading out to Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, right here in Boston. Now, Homeland Synchronizer isn't talked about at all in relation to this. We're not hearing anything from the mainstream media about Guillo. And yet, just before this all kicked into high gear, Northcom head wants new integration role in counter UAS ops. That's Guillo asking for more authority on the drone side. Now, this is significant for a lot of reasons. The unmanned aerial systems just means drones, literally. But under that umbrella, it carries the piece of the whole UAP side. In the background, this group has the ability to call an emergency based on a threat from the skies. So when you get the synchronizer op, Homeland Synchronizer, which has taken place, it's on the record, they've admitted to it, there's pictures of it, then this is basically a dry run for what you would get with switching into COG because of a UFO threat. There's no question in my mind it moves the needle. They have that atomic clock, you know, which right now is sitting 90 seconds before doomsday. That's pretty wild. But, you know, a bunch of scientists get together and they're like, what are the likelihood of a nuclear exchange? And sometimes they can move that clock back, they can move it up, depending on the tensions that are going on with the world. Right now, it's 90 seconds before midnight on that clock because of the Ukraine-Russia situation, which is, you know, it's unfathomable. It hasn't been this high since the Cuban Missile Crisis, in fact, which President Kennedy defused and saved the world. But I would put that clock, I want to create a clock here around the potential of a UFO threat activating emergency powers. The drone swarm just moved that clock dramatically closer to midnight. And this is important and it's significant. So I'm going to read a little bit from this. This is from Breaking Defense. Northcom head wants new integration role in counter UAS ops. Gregory Guillo, General Guillo, told the annual SMD symposium that he also believes the U.S. military needs to increase its efforts to field directed energy weapons, DEW, to counter not only uncrewed air force craft systems, but also cruise and hypersonic missiles. The new-ish head of U.S. Northern Command, COG combatant commander, is pushing to put defense against uncrewed aircraft systems into his job jar. Wasn't there before, you see. Arguing that Northcom could play a key role in integrating service operations to protect Defense Department facilities. Quote, in the Northcom AOR, area of responsibility, can these people speak English? The responsibility for defending UAS rests with the services over the installations, and then with the Departments of Homeland Security and Justice for other areas of critical infrastructure. General Guillot explained in a keynote today that the annual Army and Space Missile Defense Symposium in Huntsville, quote, at this time, NORTHCOM does not have a formal role in defending against UAS because of the way we operate in NORTHCOM versus UCOM or Central Command. However, I think that there's a potential for NORTHCOM to assume a significant role in helping to synchronize all the capabilities of the services and interagencies, helping to provide training, readiness, and then perhaps even flyaway kit capability. And it goes on and on talking about the different powers that he wants to ascribe now to NORTHCOM, NORAD. And in the middle of it, of course, we have the entire aspect of the United States defense system. At the drop of a hat, he could become the entire ruler of the United States if they flip the switch based on an emergency conditions. And he would become the combatant commander. And as I've mentioned, he would set up regional governors. And the idea is, oh, eventually we'd have elections, you know, as soon as I can secure the conditions on the ground. This is what they've been building up for quite a while. There's been a threat of this since the Kennedy administration. And Kennedy himself went on the record against the dangers of this, that an announced for increased security would, you know, further impede, based on an emergency, impede our freedoms here at home. That is the NORTHCOM commander, Guillot. But we know next to nothing about these people because very often in the background, they've been back in Cheyenne Mountain, in Mount Weather, in Raven Rock, planning for this emergency scenario. And very often, up until 2020, we hardly even knew their names because the whole thing was so secret. As a matter of fact, in 1987, when it was revealed that Oliver North was using the so-called Doomsday Communications Network through COG to set up the missile sales between Iran, you know, the whole Iran-Contra thing, and feeding the sales back to an illegal insurgent group back in Central America to take down the regime there. Well, North was being facilitated through Vice President Bush to use this Doomsday Network in order to set those things up. He was using the Doomsday Network, which was supposed to be used in the event of a real disaster, like a nuclear disaster. So there's a lot of implications about what took place there. But fundamentally, what happens is that NORTHCOM, artificially created after the September 11th attacks and included under the Patriot Act and all these other pieces, became a ruling factor for North America, the same way we have CENTCOM, which, you know, runs things abroad in Europe. They decided we're going to create NORTHCOM over here to run us. It's not set up in the Constitution, so it's an extra constitutional creation, as is the Central Intelligence Agency. This is the nature of unchecked power, and we barely know who these people are. Well, one of the things that I found out in relation to Guillot and others, as I've mentioned, is their key role in setting up and tracking the UFO file. Somehow, these people are very, very involved with that. When you get into that crisscross, you start to understand the emergency powers aspect in relation to the UFO threat aspect. If we can bring that forward, the possibility of them using it becomes much more minimal. But if we're just hanging out there and they're collecting information about a threat from above to activate these emergency powers through NORTHCOM NORAD, then we have a problem. And the reason that, you know, we have a lot already on the record about this being an extra constitutional force and operating with little or no oversight. That's already a problem, okay? Bringing it in with a UFO threat is the other aspect I'm saying that they're working on. But if somebody were just coming from a place of believing in freedoms, you know, in the American Constitution, the presence of NORTHCOM, the creation of NORTHCOM, is completely illegal. And it comes out again of this emergency system. But that COG system has had a huge influence on America. all the way back to the Kennedy assassination. There are strange hints. There was, of course, Professor Peter Dale Scott is the researcher who brought so much. He's the Berkeley professor. And, you know, for those in the political spectrums who think, you know, oh, it's just some right-wing thing about COG, look, Professor Scott is probably one of the most left-wing professors in all of history. He's on the left coast and...
Berkeley,
yeah. I mean, so, you know, this is someone who for four decades has written about, you know, cocaine politics, drug trafficking, Afghanistan, all these incredible things, and the JFK assassination in particular. This guy realized something very crucial. He also coined the term deep state, by the way, which is absolutely fascinating. And his work has been a huge, you know, we've had him on the show so many times. I've had so many deep conversations with him. One of the things that Professor Scott put forward was this concept of deep events. And the shorthand of all this is, let's say, the deep events of the Kennedy assassination. A group comes in that's a clandestine covert group. They come into the public sphere. They cause a change, like the assassination, and then they get a change in policy. Then they retreat. And then we get 5 years, 10 years, 20 years of people looking, sifting through the wreckage of what took place there and saying, well, this doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. And then you have the official word, oh, don't say anything about it. But through the Kennedy assassination, through Watergate, through Iran-Contra, through 9/11, through the financial coup d'etat of 2008, through the COVID op, the presence of continuity of government players shows up over and over again. I've pointed out, for example, John Dean was the counsel for continuity of government. And he's the one who ends up basically taking down Richard Nixon. In President Kennedy's case, there's two major COG figures involved around the assassination, but Winston Lawson, who is the Secret Service agent that sets up the entire Dallas trip and also lies to the Warren Commission about his own actions during the assassination, in the heart of the assassination, activates the COG network to communicate, which means the communications couldn't be tracked. And so Lawson was operating that whole emergency powers network the same way North would do later to set up Iran-Contra. There's something in that system which gets involved with every deep policy change. And here we are going again into a deep event around the UFO file. We get the drone swarm from above. It is the perfect setup. And there's a very interesting reason why somebody like Guillo would be at the top of NORTHCOM. I'm not saying anything really against Guillo, because they set him up for this position like they do with every commander in that, and they train them into this mindset. But I'm saying the system that is building this threat, that is where the issue is. And so we're going to get right to the heart of it. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Apotheum Nation 2, a follow-up to last week's episode, NORTHCOM COG UFO file. Of course, yesterday on the Alex Jones Show, Alex was kind enough to grant me the ability to host the show, to be the guest host. And we brought so many of these issues on NORTHCOM and COG to his wide audience, and the amount of things that the InfoWars audience has in common with the Ideas Room is quite fascinating. And there's an incredible, I think, dynamic that goes on there. And I think what's important for us to remember when we're dealing with this is we're right in the heart of it. You know, after the COVID operation, they've already shown what they will do with the emergency powers aspect. And, you know, after going through 9/11 in that whole terror decade, as it were, with the various color patterns for the levels of threat that were taking place and the Patriot Act and TSA and all those things, you know, little by little over time, they've moved our rights, our freedoms, you know, and they've tried to attack freedom of speech. As a matter of fact, I guarantee you that if it had been the Harris-Waltz administration that got in instead of Trump, that that would have been their top priority, because they tried over and over again to shut down any discussion and any dissent. So, you know, there's a reason why free speech is the First Amendment. After all, it's absolutely crucial, and the Founding Fathers understood this, for us to have this open dialogue. But that's the kind of ripple that I think we have here in the ideas room. And it was great to ripple that out during the Dark Journalist show when I was hosting Alex's show. Now, I want to put a couple things on the record about GEO. And before I do, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Okay, Pooper Fighter says, that's a long way around saying that Northcom is on stand down about the drones. Could it be that Northcom is running the country right now during the mental absence of Joe Biden?
Well, you know, the idea, somebody in the background has been running the country and it hasn't been Joe Biden. I think that's been pretty obvious. The Northcom role is being groomed, okay? Technically, because of the September 11th emergency, they run North America, okay? If there's an emergency, it's, you know, who are you going to call? and so when they are moving and taking more authority and doing Homeland Synchronizer, and then you find them running drones versus UAP tests, and then you find a drone swarm immediately after that, it's problematic, and we need to open up the whole story around COG and how that operates in such a super secret fashion and has for decades. And I've given stories on this program over the years that are staggering in terms of what they've done to keep that system secret and how those people who are inside that system show up over and over again directly from that underground bunker world. And, you know, because when you go into that program, just like there's a whole thing about Rumsfeld's wife saying, well, yeah, you know, I don't know where he is. He disappeared for 3 months. This would happen with Cheney too. They just disappear into bunker world where they're, you know, they've lapsed into this whole thing where they're controlling the world from the underground bunkers after a nuclear catastrophe. And Cheney got to activate the continuity of government during 9/11. But look, he had set it up in the 1980s. And it was funny, he set it up with Rumsfeld, who seems to be this lifelong partner with him going back to the Nixon days. And they were both in the Ford administration together when Rumsfeld was the youngest defense secretary in history. You know, they have an interesting symbiosis. If you're looking for that interface between the COG players and the public, the Rumsfeld, the late Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, who still is alive, and that whole, you know, thing is represented through the Liz Cheney battle with Trump. They did anything that they could to keep Trump out. And whether you're pro-Trump or not, you have to think, well, it's highly suspicious, isn't it? Because they're Republicans after all. What was going on there? That is COG in action. They did not want anything to do with somebody like Trump being in office because it thwarts their plans. Okay. Now, where did our friend Gio come out of Fort MacDill? The UFO history around Fort MacDill is thick, but I'm going to read just one WikiLeaks piece to give us an idea of how involved they are and how his role at that base put him directly in the center of the UFO file. Are you ready? Tell me you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. Tampa Bay Times. On March 3rd, 2006, a man named Bob Fish emailed John Podesta a link to a website. Fish also included his own memories of talking with an Air Force electronics intelligence technician who claimed he flew an RC-135. He flew the jets out of MacDill, and they were used for surveillance of Cuba, but were sometimes diverted to track UFOs off the coast of Florida. That comes out of a WikiLeaks document that was released when they were putting out the slew of documents and Podesta kept showing up, as you might remember. And Podesta, of course, was the chief of staff of Hillary Clinton's presidential run, but he had also been part of the Clinton administration. And he was always linked up with this weird overhang of occult things, you know, like his brother being really into Aleister Crowley. And the UFO file, he would say, oh, the truth is out there. I want the truth. And then we also know, you know, everything like Pizzagate and all the strange controversies he's been involved with. And yet he showed up right side by side with Tom DeLonge and all these other people in the launch of TTSA, where we got Lou Elizondo and all those other wonderful, noble CIA counterintelligence agents. Now, as part of this release through WikiLeaks, they opened up this story. Now, remember, I have a WikiLeaks release around COG that was dramatic, where the documents were supposed to be destroyed, but he put them out. Let me read you a little bit more about this character and what he had to say about it. Fish said his source on UFOs had a landing and takeoff spot in the ocean east of Miami, north of Bermuda, right in the heart of the hot zone. If you watch this program, you know, Hacking Atlantis, The Craze in the Hot Zone, is my documentary based on 25 episodes about this area between Bimini, Cuba, and the Yucatan Peninsula, right off the coast of Florida, which is the center of a huge archaeological war about these Atlantean ruins and something called the Two-Eye Stone that comes out of the Casey readings, which I'm going to read the quote from in just a moment here. MacDill's association with UFOs also comes forward in the famous Project Blue Book report by the Air Force relating to the investigations of unidentified flying objects, which is now part of the National Archives. According to an Air Force document drawn from the report June 5, 1961, an F-102 fighter jet was scrambled after witnesses spotted a star-shaped UFO in the skies near MacDill. The object, according to the document, had been at the base for several days. Aircraft reported contact but experienced electronic countermeasure trouble and could not complete intercept due to jamming, the document says. Whether claims about MacDill UFOs today end up in Project Blue Book of the future remains to be seen. This is where GEO comes out of, MacDill, UFO Central. They have a whole program for watching UFOs off the coast of Florida. But what's right off the coast of Florida, which is considered underwater Area 51? AUTEC. AUTEC. That's our experimental underwater base. And you've had everything from remote viewers to witnesses who say that UFOs are so common around the activities of AUTEC, which is right off Andros Island and at Guantanamo, right in that hot zone nexus, that they call them fireflies on Bimini Island when they see them. Bimini is right in the crux, in the heart of the Casey story about Atlantis. As a matter of fact, he says, you know, we're in this period, the Atlantean ruins are rising up off the coast of Bimini. And then he gives a date. He says, expect to start to see it around 1968, 1969. Well, what did divers find right off the northern coast of Bimini in 1968? The Bimini Wall. No one can explain the Bimini Wall because it's an advanced construction, megalithic structure underwater. Well, what does that suggest? There was an advanced culture there that sank. That gets you directly into the Atlantis story. AUTEC and MacDill are right in the heart of the UFO file, but they're both in the heart of the UFO story. And they're right in the heart of the hot zone. That's the key with all this. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Apotheum Nation 2. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to go into this Atlantean technology piece, and then we're going to go into your questions.
Groovy.
All right, everyone. And remember, if you're new here, especially, go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for the newsletter. It's a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch through all the incredibly, and I mean absurd censorship that we go through on this program because of the topics. And I would love the topics, you know, I'd love the media to be a free flow and a free flow of conversation and debate and everything else. But when they get around the work that we do, they try everything to suppress that type of information. So you and I in the ideas room are opening up a whole chapter of conversation. And that conversation is rising to the surface now through the censorship. How fantastic is that? How are you doing out there?
Doing great. Got a lot of questions all over the place.
All right. I'm just going to go right into it. Okay. So first of all, when you get around any major UFO case, Roswell, Kecksburg, Betty and Barney Hill, you know, there's always an element of hieroglyphs involved in the cases. If you go deep. Some have it really obvious and in your face. They'll say, oh, this hieroglyphs. Others, you have to hunt for it a little bit. A classic case, of course, the Roswell case, nothing could be more straight down the line. There have been some suggestion over the years that, oh, the government, you know, simultaneously put out the story of Roswell and then knocked it down to create the two sides that could war against each other. And that Roswell was some advanced craft that was taken down. But it wasn't a UFO. It was something else. I don't believe that. I think Roswell was legitimately some kind of off-world vehicle or advanced craft that had nothing to do with the military. Jesse Marcel was the intelligence agent who found it. Oh, well, Mac Brazel found it, but he was the first intelligence agent to look at it. He was part of the 509th group, which, remember, General Van Herk from COG is part of that generational, intergenerational thing of the 509th. He was part of the 509th. I think it's an interesting signature. Marcel says the debris field was strewn around for miles. And then, of course, what they do is they have him pose with a weather balloon and say, oh, it was just a weather balloon, forget it. Nobody knew about the story. They took it off the news wire. It sank. Nobody heard anything about it again until 1980. So 1947 to 1980, that is 33 years there. So this idea that, oh, you know, the government created Roswell so you'd believe in UFOs doesn't make sense because they suppressed the entire story and sat on it until Stanton Friedman came across Jesse Marcel. This is what they had Marcel pose with, which Marcel would later say, oh, they knew this was complete bunk. That had nothing to do with what I had actually found, which was a huge craft that had been obliterated basically all over this guy's farm. Now, what's crucial is what he found. On the beams of the craft, he found these unusual symbols and also a good deal of apothium around the metal itself, which is you couldn't bend it or burn it or do anything with it. That's the beam description taken from his son's memory, Jesse Marcel Jr., about what his dad showed him. And it's a series of unusual hieroglyphic-like symbols on one of these beams. There are a number of them all over this guy's field. An interesting thing there is that the animals avoided the area, which I found interesting. His cattle wouldn't go anywhere near it. There had been sightings in the area of New Mexico and Washington and all that just previous to the Roswell incident. So it was this, you know, as a matter of fact, a lot of people have suggested that possibly even Kenneth Arnold's sighting was related directly to, it might even have been the same craft because that's June 26th and then it's July 3rd. So, you know, what are you talking about? A week later there, if that thing is moving down, it could in fact be the same group of craft. So you have the set of hieroglyphs there. And then if you get around the Kecksburg incident, well, I have it here somewhere, but you get into these hieroglyphs again. Other stories, hieroglyph this, hieroglyph, hieroglyph. Now, let's take our minds off the idea of just off-world visitors and think about an ancient advanced civilization as a possible cause for these sightings of advanced craft through centuries, by the way, that someone kept the ability of flight, that someone inherited it and kept it through mystery channels and kept the technology through mystery channels. After all, the story around Atlantis that we got from Plato was Atlantis basically blew itself up. Casey gives us the same story around Atlantis, and I'm going to read what he had to say about the Two-Eye Stone and how the Two-Eye Stone was a massive worldwide power grid that created this, you know, the ability for them to do whatever they wanted to do. And he talked about craft that not only could fly, you know, at high altitudes, but it could fly through things. What kind of technology is that? You know, you have to go really deep when you're dealing with the Casey readings. I want to say this about Edgar Casey, and we're going to do a major, you know, it's the 80th anniversary of Casey's death that's coming up on January 3rd. We're going to do a major show on Edgar Casey. We've done, of course, a number of shows on Casey over the years. He's kind of a bedrock foundation of this show. But I specifically try to tune in on the Atlantis readings because even his own administration, you know, the group that carries on the work and so many great people associated with the ARE, the Association of Research and Enlightenment, and I highly recommend the organization and what they do in caring for the Casey readings and everything else. So it's not really criticism of them. It's just that the, you know, when you get around holistic healing and you get around spiritual thought and things of this nature, you're developing this environment. Casey's coming in with really, really hardcore information about Atlantis, that there's a group, you know, the spiritual group uses advanced technology. And I mean, the way his descriptions in the 1920s are off the charts. There's nothing like that anywhere. And, you know, they have lasers, they have spacecraft, they are super advanced civilization, and they do things telepathically. They interface telepathically with the high tech. The technology is used by one group, the Amelius group, to interface with the outer spheres, the saintly realm. And they train people from birth for it, priestesses and others, to use the technology. There's a group there called the Belial group, which is highly imitative. And they don't have the same scruples as the Amelius group. And they start to see what they're doing with it. And little by little, they integrate themselves into this situation. And they start to use the technology, not for communion with the higher outer spheres, but to send lasers down against their, you know, neighbors and other countries and things. And they dominate using that two-eye stone technology. The two-eye stone is a fascinating piece, and I've done a number of overviews on it. The best, of course, is our documentary, Hacking Atlantis, The Craze in the Hot Zone, which is available on this channel. And we'll give you that idea about exactly what was going on with the secret technology. But the echoes that we hear later of what happened with Atlantis, this incredible devastation and how the island goes under after all these inundations and earthquakes, setting off volcanoes and everything else. This is an advanced group, and they have advanced technology. And this group of mystery schools carried the information and carried the knowledge. So I'm going to read a couple of quotes from Casey about this technology, and I'm going to introduce you to some ideas around this, which is, you know, some of the things that they've discovered. For example, in Florida, we've pointed out this is a representation of that two-eye stone technology, unexplained, discovered by Bloomfield. And there's a whole story around, of course, his mother was the one who funded Tesla and Keeley. But whenever you get around the hot zone, deep, deep tracks in terms of advanced technology. Here's the Casey quote. Then we'll read a quote about Apotheum, and then we'll go to your questions. How does that sound? Mm-hmm. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Apotheum Nation 2. We're going to wrap up this segment and then go to your questions. And it's great to have so many of you here. If you have something for me, go for it.
Blazon River says, how might a bipedal race evolve if they were driven underground for thousands of years due to events making the surface uninhabitable? Big eyes, loss of hair, change in skin color, body structure. A race that can move giant stone blocks may be able to travel through stone like we do water.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, when you get around Apotheum effects, right, what do you hear about in UFO encounters? This is what I got out of John Mack's work, which is so fascinating, which is that when people were abducted, they were going through things. And for him, it didn't make sense. So he started to realize, oh, it's not just a physical thing where a ship shows up and grabs people. Something else is taking place. That's a key realization in the discovery, well, in the lineage of the timeline of discovery. It's absolutely crucial. And when I was developing, I was starting to see this whole pattern of all the different things that would happen around UFOs. And I said, oh, they're all Apotheum effects. they distort reality. And when you distort the physics, you know, reality distortion physics, then there is no reality, you see. So when you're dealing with that from a scientific basis, when they're having people, and I've pointed this out actually, which is during the Aztec crash, there's a lot of information we still have about the Aztec crash. And when they would send scientists into this almost fully intact craft to examine what was going on there, they would get very sick or they would get disoriented. And they realized they actually created a protocol where you could only spend 20 minutes inside of that disc. And some of the effects that they would have and report would get rather dramatic. For example, not only would they get physically ill, but they would start to lapse into almost these kind of shamanic states where they could see loved ones who had passed, you know, and so they had these near-death experiences. And then they could, you know, some of them reported seeing the whole outline of their lives into the future. So there's a whole time travel aspect. Others encountered beings who weren't there, you know, but they were seeing them and just by being in the craft. So you're in the hyper-dimensional space. You start to experience things that don't comport with universal physical reality as we understand it. That's what apotheum is. And so they have actual protocols for apotheum. When you get into the level of secrecy around the UFO file, for me, it's not just an alien aspect. It has to do with this entire shifting of the physics of reality. That's the reality distortion. That's the key if you want to follow up on exactly why they've kept such a tight lid on this.
Before you move on,
yeah.
Christine Laurel says, is DJ suggesting that the Atlanteans were communicating only with interdimensionals, not physical ETs, with Roswell-type craft? The physical craft is actually human/Atlantean?
Well, no, I think, the idea of off-world visitors, it's a very likely postulation for all of this. You know, you could definitely suggest that there are off-world visitors, they're coming here. But the problem is when you go too much into that corridor, it doesn't explain a number of things. For example, the Atlanteans had this advanced technology. You know, it's often suggested that, oh, you know, when you get around the UFO file, it would be the biggest, I guarantee you, yeah, it would be an ontological shock, as they say. But it's not actually the biggest secret of all humanity. You know, first of all, resurrection, I think, would be probably the biggest secret, right? It's more important than the idea that we have peers out there. But the idea that Atlantis existed and was advanced and possessed this advanced technology and that there was a spiritual battle that took place there and that this is humanity's actual heritage and that there's been a kind of cultural amnesia about this, then I think that that is a bigger realization. I actually think the UFO file piece is the top secret in the national security state. But in terms of revelations, I mean, the Atlantean part is absolutely right there. So that's how I would suggest that. Yeah, but I think it's a both and kind of situation for sure. And I don't always think that you, what you have is, it's very interesting the divisions that come up because you say, well, that's just human technology and they're pretending it's ET. And again, when they say it about Roswell, it doesn't make any sense because they suppressed the whole story of Roswell. No one knew about it until 1980. So that none of that logic doesn't work. So therefore, they were dealing with something else, right? What is the else becomes the question. Now, there is also, through my work in the Cosmos Club, and I'll keep this in a nutshell, the Cosmos Club, remember, they're kind of like UFO Bilderberg. But the founder, when they founded it in 1870, he'd spent all this time in Cape Girardeau. And then he went and stayed with the Paiutes, and he learned all about something. My guess is that he found some kind of an ancient craft. And that they learned, again, about a group like the Atlanteans who passed down this advanced technology. And they could be the ones who are flying all of this. an advanced group that survived and kept the technology. It has to be factored in. There's too much there. And with the Cosmos Club, I'll just say this. He came from Cape Girardeau, or he was stationed in Cape Girardeau during the Civil War, stayed on there. So I think he's there for like 6 years. Well, what's the first major UFO crash case with bodies and everything? It's Cape Girardeau, 1941. So, you know, I mean, it makes him as the founder being there in Cape Girardeau, you know, Missouri, very, very interesting locale, shall we say. Yes.
I'm starting to really believe in time travel. Like, really.
Oh, yes. Yes. You know,
And that for some reason, the idea that all this time for thousands of years, sort of Atlanteans have been under the earth. I'm not there yet. But the idea that time travelers have knew that they had to create some kind of a fortress here and now in this time period, let's say from Atlantis or another, and that they would do it under the earth. And those are the beings that we're dealing with, that they have poor, this is sort of like They Live. I mean, except that they're, you know, they are above, but they're also, you know, they have these underground complexes.
Well, it's interesting. And you make a great point there, which is, it's what I started off the show with, which is it's the reality of the mystery of these things. It doesn't require any fiction. Mm. And so, you know, all of the groups, like I mentioned, the kind of Fruit Loop stuff out of Gaia TV and all that, it's just not necessary. You know, there's so many real mysteries to dig into. That's where the potent aspect of all this is. All right, here comes the Casey quote, and then we go to your questions. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. Apotheum Nation 2, this is the X series follow-up for episode 181, the Northcom UFO COG file. And we covered, you know, we opened up this conversation to when I guest hosted for Alex yesterday. And so that all that information now is coming further and further up. And right in the middle of it is this whole Northcom piece based around the drone swarms. And as I mentioned when we started the program, the FAA now has rules that you can't fly drones over New Jersey. And, you know, they're enforcing those rules at airports and other places with deadly force, too. That's a huge change. And it's an entire kind of shift there that is dramatic. And I think shows that the things that we were saying about it, you know, regardless, getting past the spin and the blocking and the wall of secrecy from the media and the government on that, it gets right to the heart of it. Now they're putting the rules in place. The drone buster is coming out. Okay. Atlantis at the time of the third destruction. So what Casey is doing, and there's no way to get around this, Casey is going through the past lives of the individuals who've come to him for readings. And he's reading their past lives, and then he gets to Atlantis, and it's this retrocognitive piece where he sees through the Akashic record what took place in Atlantis. So he says, talking about this particular entity, in the Atlantean land, just after the second breaking up of the land, owing to the misapplication of divine laws upon those things of nature or the earth, where there were the eruptions from the second using of those influences that were for man's own development yet became destructive forces to the flesh when misapplied. This is the terrible mighty crystal, the two-eye stone power grid. It was an incredible gift for humanity, but here they were misapplying it. The power from the firestones, not intentionally, were tuned too high and brought about the second period of destruction forces to the peoples in the land and broke up the land into islands. Remember, originally Atlantis is one continent, from the Gulf of Mexico on one side to the Mediterranean on the other. Then the power grid, the Atlanteans, the Sons of Belial, tune those forces too high. They exacerbate forces, volcanic forces, cause a huge split in those islands. And you get three islands. Casey calls them Poseidia. That's the one that was in the Bahamas. The other one is Arion, and Og. And the sort of the headquarters, the focal point of the Emilius group, this Law of One spiritual group, which had the technology originally and was battling with the Sons of Belial, that's the group that's in the Bahamas. That's Poseidia. That's where the temple off of Bimini is rising. And that's what all the attention around the hot zone is about. There's an interesting key there with Casey and what he has to say about the secret of humanity, basically, is in these Atlantean Hall of Records. But every, you know, now and then we hear about this thing where, oh, there's some digging around the Sphinx. They think they've found a chamber or whatever. That all goes back to Casey putting this on the record. This all comes out of the Casey work. That there was a Hall of Record placed under the paw of the Sphinx by the Atlanteans who were fleeing, came into Egypt and said, you know, here's all this Emilius group info. We've collected all this wisdom and all this technological knowledge. We're putting it, we're storing it underneath this plateau of Giza. Casey puts the date 10,500 BC. That whole plaza, the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx, that is the work of the Atlanteans. Rata and Hermes. Rata being an early incarnation of Edgar Casey as this Atlantean priest, high priest. Now, one of the interesting things, if you go into the readings, is he says, well, actually, there's three Hall of Records, and they all contain the same information. And one of them is off the coast of Bimini, and it's rising now. That's where the Bimini Road, the Bimini Wall is. That's the Poseidon Temple where they hid the Hall of Records, and the other one's in Yucatan. We did a show last year called Pawgate, which really gets deep, deep in the details. But again, the Hacking Atlantis documentary will open that door for you. Here's a little more on that. Before the second upheavals, when there was the dividing of the islands, when the temptations were begun and the activities of the Sons of Belial and the Children of the Law of One, the Emilius group, the entity was among those that interpreted the messages that were received through the crystals and the fires that were to be the eternal forces of nature and made for the helpful forces in the experience of groups during that period. New developments in air, water, travel were the beginning of developments in that period for the escape. They had to escape the destruction of Atlantis, and they were getting this information through the crystals applied properly of how to construct these machines and other things in order to get out. The entity was in that was in Atlantis during those periods, just before the second breaking up of the land, was among the Sons of Belial, who used divine forces for the gratifying of appetites. This is interesting, and this is where so much of our own culture goes, which is applying the technology in order to suppress groups, control people, control, do mind control. You know, that 1% of 1% class up there trying to control things on the ground is a reenactment of this pattern of the Belial group. And we have the Emilius group very suppressed. Remember, ultimately, the Sons of Belial defeat the Emilius group. But the Emilius group goes and places and deposits their information and starts these other legacy cultures, like Egypt, like the Maya, and like the Inca. So the Sons of Belial win, but the, you know, the fruits of victory are ashes in their mouth as they've taken down the entire continent of Atlantis through the misuse of the Two-Eye Stone. This is the story we get from the Casey work. And this is the hand down of the mystery schools that now becomes more of an obvious piece for us to listen to and understand as we move into the 21st century and through these incredible technological, cultural, and spiritual challenges, we're seeing it. We're coming face to face with the idea that they had developed the technology back here. It was an advanced culture, and this is what we're running back into. We're coming face to face with ourselves again through this understanding of our ancient past with our current developments. Remember, you go back 120 years, you know, it's horse and buggy time. These are incredible developments in a very short period of time. And that goes directly to our Atlantean heritage. And with that, Miss Olivia, you're up and your questions.
All right. Doc Roswell, DJ, do you think the drones are an intentional ET-led precursor to further disclosure efforts under Trump administration? Possible agreement between DJT and ET facilitated by Tesla Tech / Family Secrets?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of connections in what you just said, because, of course, Trump in his background has these connections to the Tesla technology and the UFO file. This is not, you know, some projection onto Trump as some grand, you know, exotic technology wizard. He has the, it's demonstrable, you know, it's factual. And we put it on the record. We did an episode in as far back as 2018 called Tesla, Trump, and the Time Capsule, where we laid it out. And there are academic books now written by these authors who are masters of the Cold War or whatever, and they bring forward facts directly out of our research from that. So it's crisscrossed over now. And, you know, that whole thing about John Trump, which we opened the show with, it absolutely has to be understood, which is John Trump was there, called in by Vannevar Bush, the head of the UFO file, to go into Tesla's papers, to go into that work, to find something in particular, what John Trump said it was. You know, presumably it was supposed to be this death ray information that they wanted. But I'm sure they were interested in that. But what John Trump said, well, actually, the FBI people said they were looking specifically for something that took flying objects down at a distance. You're sitting there in Honolulu, you press a button, and a craft goes down over the UK. That is the UFO killer from the Brother Sunburst episode that we did. It is this device, and that's a device, not a person, right? There's going to be a lot coming forward out of that. When I put Brother Sunburst and everything on the record, a lot of people have come out of the background and given me information about this. So this may become something explosive we explode into 2025 with. But I think the drones seem to be, the drones form seems to be a test of the system. And I think it comes directly out of this Operation Homeland Synchronizer test by NORTHCOM COG Commander General Guillo. And I'll tell you, the timing is just too good. And as somebody who watches the media the way that I do, to see the COG commander retired come out and write these articles in the Wall Street Journal just before the drones forms saying the USA is unprotected, and then to have Guillo himself, NORTHCOM boy, coming forward, you know, as the general and saying, you know, I want new powers having to deal with UAS. This is a problem. And the fact that he's doing the Homeland Synchronizer test, which has to do with UAP on one side and the unmanned drones on the other, that's a big problem. We're in the middle of a big problem. Go ahead.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. So, Contiki Man, can you imagine the amount of data gathered in Syria and Ukraine to learn AI-controlled drone swarm warfare? Will it still require boots on the ground to enforce martial law?
How do you control 7-8 billion people? It's not easy. You saw even during COVID, there's a lot of resistance. As a matter of fact, they unmasked themselves to such a degree that many of the structures that set up COVID, you know, from Jacinda Ardern, who's over here at Harvard. I guess they send all the rejects now from who try to take over the world with COVID martial law. They send them over here to Harvard. You know, that whole gang seems to have fallen. I mean, just Trudeau is another one. There are aspects. And of course, Starmer, for example, in the UK is, you know, major repressive force. And somebody who I think really is going to be the focal, it's going to be, America is going to be opening up this idea of free speech, you know, freedom, this whole thing. And you're going to have this thing coming in from Europe, which is trying to repress everybody's right to express themselves online, to express dissent, you know, which wanted mandates for this, mandates for that, and ultimately would want a digital cash system. There's something fundamental about America that rejects this central control. So, you know, it's anybody's guess how this will all play out, but I'll say this, you know, the idea of Trump and Bobby getting into positions of running the government again, I think is crucial. It's that partnership, which took place in August at that event in Arizona, that really changed the trajectory of the election and our future at that time. And I think it was that Bobby Kennedy saw that with Trump about to be assassinated, you know, that attempt that took place, he saw that it was time to move to join forces. And I think that that has been an exceptional partnership. So, you know, there are a lot of forces that are going to try to unravel everything here, but I think there's great potential with what could be brought forward under this administration if we get it right. If we get it right. Yes.
Okay, let me give you a bundle. Alchemy by Angela. Do you see the Iran-planted weapons of mass destruction narrative being played to enact COG along with fake alien invasion? Jen Passavant, power grid issues to create an emergency for COG and the MAC. DJ, in this age of disinformation, what are your recommendations for spotting and decoding psyops?
Yeah, well, remember, all these things, I mentioned this on the Alex Jones show yesterday. The acronyms, you have to open them up. UFOs, unidentified flying object, right? That's what you're talking about. COG's continuity of government. PSYOP is psychological operation, which they're masters at on that side. So, yeah, there's a number of different things that could be used. You mentioned Iran there. Look, they tried to come up with this idea, you know. What happens is somebody runs an op or a test, and the question is, does the test go live? This happened during 9/11 because there were actually drills being run about planes being flown into buildings by terrorists. Right? on 9/11. Those were the drills that were being run. Somebody inside that structure is aware of the drill that's being run and piggybacks on the back of it, and they make it go live. So the COVID thing is the same deal. Of course, we had Event 201. They ran it in the fall of 2019, and then they bring in the real deal, you know, right after that. Of course, Avril Haines, it's very interesting as the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, because she's somebody who ran that. But what did she show up in the middle of? Well, she showed up in the middle of the UAP thing, you know, supporting Arrow, creating the UFO Defense Office. Haines had a lot to say about UFOs and was like, we need to get this, you know, defense grid in place. We don't know what's out there. And then she took place in an extraordinary intelligence meeting, which I've tried to emphasize to anyone who is interested around the UFO subject about the government interface of that CIA UFO threat. That took place at Wright-Patterson, which is UFO Central, as we know. That's where they've taken the debris over the years. They had a drone incursion over there in relation to all of these drone swarms that were going on recently. But at Wright-Patterson, you had the DNI. You had a former CIA director. You had all the heads of the intelligence departments from NGA, NRO, and others. They all got together just before the congressional hearings about UFOs in Congress, and where they had, you know, all these different speakers, and where they rolled Grush out and all that kind of stuff. So that meeting at Wright-Patterson with all of those people. And there were a lot of weird reports there, too. They tried out a lot of things. Do you remember they had those aliens in the backyard of those people mm-hmm. in Las Vegas, and they had these, you know, kind of iPhone camera footage of this thing? they tried that. You know, they tried a lot of different little sidelings around the UFO file to see what they could get away with, what kind of input they would get on the back end. Ultimately, in my opinion, that deep structure, the ex-protect style forces, were disappointed with what they got out of those hearings. They weren't fully pleased, and they came up with a different idea about how to launch this. But it is interesting because Haynes in the middle there, and then around event 201, and then right in the middle of the Wright-Patterson intelligence meeting, which launches this next UFO threat wave idea. And they got a lot done because they attached Arrow to the NDAA, as I mentioned. But that was done through Senator Kirsten Gillibrand out of New York, whose father-in-law ran British Aerospace. And also Marco Rubio, our incoming Secretary of State from the Space Coast, so who suddenly started talking about UFOs any opportunity he could get, you know. So there's a lot of moves there. But the Iranian one is the piggyback operation. They throw that in just like when they got around the Trump assassination attempt. They said, oh, it's an Iranian group that's doing it. So you don't look at the fact that, you know, the CIA was involved, or that the Secret Service dropped the ball on purpose in Butler, Pennsylvania, by allowing Thomas Matthew Crooks or whoever that was in that roof. Because remember, it's hard to identify who they actually had there because they cremated him too quickly. And apparently there were a couple of versions of Crooks walking around there, including someone known as Flatface, who walked off into the woods while Crooks was getting shot. You know, when you get into that deep state nexus around assassination, there's a hall of mirrors there. But certainly Iran, as the boogeyman, was a way that they wanted to go. And they wanted to attach that by saying, well, there's an Iranian mothership that's feeding these drones off the coast, which is absurd. But using the term mothership, again, opens you up to what? What is mothership? That comes directly out of the 60s and 70s dialogue around UFOs. And that's the heart of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've been dealing with this for a while. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Apotheum Nation 2, Northcom COG UFO file. We're going to take a couple more of your questions, and then we're going to wrap it up for tonight. I want to mention to you, if you're new here especially, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That is a free newsletter, but it keeps you in touch with us around this incredible censorship that we deal with on a regular basis. But you can cut through all that by being standing up and being counted and being on that newsletter list. That's where you find out about our new documentaries. For example, JFK, The Final Speech, that's out now right here on this channel. And also the incredible interviews we have coming up for you, mind-blowing interviews. And for January and February, exciting X-Series episodes that will blow your mind, and events, special events that are in the works. So it's all there in that free newsletter. Stand up and be counted. Go to darkjournalist.com. And sign up for that newsletter. Okay, so we'll take a couple more questions and we're out.
Lazen River, the Eisenhower meeting with ET was 1 year after DC was buzzed. Could this be the same thing but with drones to mask it? And channeling the heart, Barbara Joyce, what does DJ think of the orbs accompanying the drones, orbs in the spiritual paranormal sense?
There's no question. The orbs keep showing up, but they always did. You know, there's a famous story I've put on the record. That Thomas Townsend Brown's daughter told me about how when he was, you know, in prep school in Pennsylvania, and of course, T.T. Brown, one of the most incredible psychics, scientists, probably psychic too, incredible scientist in American Black Projects history, associated with everything from the Philadelphia experiment to the UFO file to time travel. He, as a young man, standing on the river there with a horse, sees an orb float over the river, stops dead center, and it's just, he's looking at it, wondering. Then it comes full force at him and knocks him down and freaks his horse out. And before him, he sees his entire life, everything that's going to happen, the children he's going to have, the woman he's going to marry, work that he's going to do, the contributions to humanity that he's going to make. So these orb experiences, and he'll try to recreate the technology of the orb, by the way, into an actual technological device later in life. But there's a number of things about orbs that show up in this kind of environment, and it becomes quite unusual. There's an author who I think his work is still underappreciated, even though they've made movies out of some of his stuff. But John Keel was really close on the UFO file to what is actually going on. I have a quote from John Keel around this, and he was talking about lights, but of course orbs falls in with that. But since we were talking about, you know, Jesse Marcel and crash craft and things of this nature, listen to this story. 1880, Galisto Junction, New Mexico, was not exactly a thriving metropolis. Today has a population of 150. It lies south of Santa Fe, somewhat off whatever beaten tracks existed in those days. On the evening of March 26, 1880, four men were walking there when they saw a fish-shaped balloon cruising low in the sky. They could even make out 8 or 10 figures in the craft and could hear them babbling in some unknown language. Well, the craft must have been pretty low. As the object passed overhead, something dropped from it, a vase of some sort, covered with strange, here we go again, hieroglyphics. The men carted it to the local general store as proof of their sighting, and it was placed on display there. A couple days later, a stranger came into town. He identified himself as a collector and bought the vase for an unspecified amount of money. Then he rode off into the western sunset. The story might seem apocryphal until you realize there were no operational dirigibles in the U.S. in 1880. The great airship craze of 1896, 1897 was still 17 years away. Communications between Galisto Junction and people outside the world at that time was not the best. Yet somehow this collector from some far off place heard about the vase and traveled to this remote little town to buy it. This particular charade has been repeated endlessly. Some kind of evidence is found at a UFO site. The person who retrieves it soon is visited by a stranger who buys it or steals it. Now, it's very interesting because there's a story in Kenneth Arnold's book which parlays directly into this buying or stealing some UFO wreckage. And it's the Kenneth Arnold story is so dramatic, and the way that it's kind of limited in history to him just seeing some sightings, it goes on and on and on. What I will say about this is that, and I'm going to read a quote from his book, there's someone named Major Sander who shows up. Now, what happens is Kenneth Arnold sees all these craft, and then he reports the story, and then the thing about flying saucers becomes worldwide famous. Someone calls him up from a magazine and says, actually, somebody else reported a craft off of Maury Island. And some slag came off this craft, and it burned, you know, the guy's son's arm, and it killed their dog. Can you go investigate that story? Like, they're not flying saucers, but they were kind of donut-shaped. And he's like, I want to hire you to do this as a private investigator because you have unusual credentials after seeing these craft. Tell me if the story's real. A guy's name was Ray Palmer, and he sent Kenneth Arnold to Maury Island to investigate this. All these weird kind of Twilight Zone-y things happen when Arnold get there. Like when he goes to check in, he realizes the whole town is full up because something is going on there, some kind of convention. And yet this one hotel says, oh no, your room is already booked, you know, Mr. Arnold. And odd things happen. Intelligence agents show up. Men in black show up when he's investigating this case. But ultimately, the people involved in it bring him this slag that came off of this craft, and they walk it into, you know, his hotel room and put it in a cart. And he calls in these military intelligence agents to look at it, and they say, we need to fly it back to the base. They take the slag, they put it on the plane, their plane crashes. Then, after that, a story comes out and is floated in the local newspaper that the whole thing was a hoax, the guy hoaxed it, And Arnold's uneasy about everything that's going on. He knows that something is up, and it's quite dramatic what takes place. But in the middle of it, this Major Sanders shows up. Mm-hmm. And this is a friendly major, and he is talking about him and reassuring him, oh, I can see the kind of trauma you've just been through. And I'm just going to read you a little pinch of this to dovetail with Keel's story, and then we'll take your last question. How's that? All right. I'm very certain, Major Sander continued, that the B-25 crash, where the pilots died who were carrying the slag, was just another one of those strange accidents. It's too bad that a misleading story was printed in the newspaper, because it was going around that the plane was sabotaged. Right there, I looked at Captain Smith, his friend who was doing the investigation with him, Smitty, as they call him, who knew that story, if it was misleading, was so only from one standpoint that no definite proof had been established regarding the possible sabotage of the B-25. We let this remark go. We were so happy and at last felt free to leave Tacoma and go home. Because Arnold was like, oh, I got myself way in over my head. Forget it. Major Sander got up from his chair and made some remark about the fragments on the floor. There were still fragments from the cartons that had been brought in. So some of the slag was still on the floor of the hotel where Arnold was. I remember the major saying that they would have these analyzed for the sake of being thorough, but that he wanted to take a drive with him. He was going to show us thousands of tons of this stuff. Apparently, supposed fragments from a flying disc were really something else. We brightened up. We were going to be shown that, and it made us happy. Major Sanders started to gather up and wrap up the fragments in a hotel towel. And the intention he had was of taking them with him. There were lots of fragments on the floor and all around. Both Smithy and I were helping him pick them up. I ran into one piece that looked like it would make a good ashtray. Almost at the same time, Smithy ran into another piece that he put in his pocket, saying it would make a good paperweight. I said, yeah, I think I'll take a piece of this home, too, for the ashtray, just as a souvenir. Major Sander gathered up all the pieces and piled them on top of several towels. He started to bundle them and stopped short, turned to me and said, we don't want to overlook even one piece. I would like to have them all, please. That gave me a start. I handed him my piece, and Smitty's eyes met mine over Major Sanders' back. The major put out his hand and to Captain Smith for his piece. He, like myself, willingly gave it to him. Maybe Major Sanders was not conscious of what Captain Smith and I mentally said to one another. I thought, this Major Sanders is a pretty smooth guy, but he's not smooth enough at this point to convince me that these fragments aren't important in some way. I suddenly felt that no one played a hoax on anybody. I thought, Major Sanders is a phony, dressed up in a lot of sheer intelligence as to how to psychologically to handle men. I had bumped into a few of these fellows in my life. From the things that they say, it's pretty tough to decipher what they really mean. And what he figures out is that actually Major Sander has hypnotized both him and Smitty to hand over anything and everything related to the crash. And the whole experience with Sander is quite fascinating. What happens, and that's, you know, really taking those objects, they have to have anything that comes in relation to this. And then the Twilight Zone aspect that happens is when they go back to the witness who they had interviewed a few days later when all this had started, Harold Dahl, they go to his place in this totally new cabin that they had been at and visited at before and interviewed him. Now all of a sudden had cobwebs. All the furniture was gone. It was dilapidated. It was the same address, the same exact place, but it had aged dramatically like no one had ever lived there. And Dahl went completely off the map and never talked to Arnold again. So, you know, this is when I talk about apotheum, you know, we've heard terms like high strangeness and things like that in relation to the UFO file. It doesn't even touch the depth of the strange experiences that these people have had. So we have to understand this at a deeper level when we get involved in these things. And so those stories are highly illustrative of that. We'll take your last question, Miss Olivia.
I'm going to give you a bundle. They're all related.
All right.
Okay. Najat Madri.
I hope you'll give me a bundle. How much is that?
What does DJ think about all the talk of plasma around the drones, alternative and non-alternative sources have mentioned it. Karen Carpenter, some people say they've seen orbs near planes that have disappeared. Are the orbs advanced tech? Jen Passavant, orbs equal plasma technology. Tina Borch, orbs are souls. Luminessa Lux, the orbs are telepathic, so sentient. And Kel, it's orbs versus drones, it would seem.
Wow, those are great questions. And things are opening up around plasma, for sure. But I don't want everyone, in my opinion, let's not go over a cliff and say, well, it's just a bunch of plasma beings or whatever. There is something significant, I would say, about the discoveries we're making about it. And I think the orbs, again, represent two things. One, it's an intelligence when it occurs naturally. And I think that's a kind of a covering of intelligence there. And the orbs seem to communicate on these levels, like with T.T. Brown, that it almost seems like a destiny thing. The artificial creation of orbs, though, you know, there's a lot of mysteries around this in history, but we also have the ability to artificially create these things, which can have a totally different purpose. When I think about the Foo Fighters and the different things that happened, Gordon Cooper gives a great analysis of when he was in Germany training before he became an astronaut. He was a pilot flying in West Germany, and they would have these formations that they would fly in, and then the Foo Fighters would just show up behind them and do the formations. So they would show up in the same numbers and act the same exact way. They would mirror what they were doing. So they were obviously testing out what kind of abilities that we had, and there might have also been something kind of entertaining about that for the orbs and the people who were operating the Foo Fighters, as they call them, which are an early version of UFOs. But, you know, very often people will attribute something. They'll say, well, you know, aliens are demonic or UFOs are demonic right off the bat. You have to be careful, because take Gordon Cooper's experience. When he shows up and he is doing his operations, training as a pilot, and these Foo Fighters follow him, just like the World War II pilots had all these Foo Fighters following them. I mean, does that suggest that they're some kind of nefarious evil thing, or are they just a group that controls the air, you know, that when we got the ability to get back up there, are they just tracking us and seeing what our abilities are, what we can do, what we can handle? When you get into some of the deeper experiences of abduction, you know, and things of that nature, where they do the testing and all of these things happen, like the Betty and Barney Hill case, it does, you know, it sounds like scientific groups observing humanity, testing them out, testing their DNA out. I think it is also interesting that dramatically after, say, the year 2000, the abduction experience became less and less and less, after really maxing out in the 90s, I would say, if you go through the literature. So therefore, you know, it's been suggested, and I think very interestingly, that they knew that the augmentation of humanity was going to be taking place, and that this whole kind of Frankenstein of AI and all of these other things that they wanted to do with humanity, with the nanotechnology and all the things that are coming through the pharmaceuticals, et cetera. And they decided, we want, you know, we want to get all our specimens, we want to do all that stuff before this other stuff comes in and pollutes the whole scenario. I find that incredibly, extremely compelling. And I hope that opens up maybe the conversations around this. In terms of the drones themselves, I think we start with the idea, the root of the research, I think, is based on what people have seen on the ground. And then secondarily, what was going on, you know, simultaneously around this. And what I've found is Homeland Synchronizer, run by Northcom, which was drones versus UAPs. If he was running that test and then we get drone swarms everywhere, it's, you know, how could it not be related? I guess that's the way I look at it. The odds of it being related, if we go deeper and deeper into that investigation, I think we're going to find it. And but those are fantastic questions. Wow. Great ideas from tonight. Absolutely amazing. And Miss Olivia, bravo.
I got tons of questions left.
We'll get into it. We'll be coming back next week. And of course, the X series will return on January 3rd with the 80th anniversary of the passing of Edgar Casey. And we'll do a very deep Edgar Casey and Atlantis episode January 3rd. Next week, I have a very special episode for you as well. There may be follow-up reports based on what's going on in the world with everything that's happening. I want to remind you, if you're new, again, go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for our newsletter. That's the way to keep in touch with us, and in case you don't get those notices on social media. And I will also say that, you know, we're gonna be doing so many exciting things for subscribers coming up in 2025. Now's the time to get on board and get behind the efforts of the show that we're doing here. I'm going to do some shout outs after you do your super chats.
Okay. All right. I'd like to thank Occult Fan, Eurythmia is Fun, Jessica Rodriguez, Bravo E Sierra T, G Myers Gilmer, Systematically Discombobulated, Jay Parsons, Amarillo Gunrunners, Wolfgang McCarthy, Steven, The Mac, TMG2RFJ, Gene Loves Animals Domestic and Wild, Drone Alien, Deskat Brock, Pretty Pretty Good, Jinx Jackson, Ray Story, Sarah Ann, Channeling the Heart, Barbara Joyce, Xavier Figueroa, Terry Doherty, Erica Swenson Elliott, Melody Lenz, Hierophantus Maximus, Bill Monahan, Debbie McAdoo, Robert Scott, KK, Barry7676, Johnny Ricardo Bown, Bo Krills. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Wow, incredible. And we really appreciate your support. Of course, that is Moon Township, Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh International Airport's right there. I'm going to do some shout outs here. And remember also, I want to thank all our subscribers who keep us going. We couldn't do the show without you, and we appreciate it. To all our supporters, thank you, because it makes a huge difference, and we hope to do a great job for you in 2025. Now, I'm going to do some shout-outs, and we'll wrap up the show from there. Mm-hmm. How are you doing out there?
Fabulous.
Excellent.
I just want to say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays yes. to everybody.
Excellent. Merry Christmas indeed to one and all. Mike Rotondo, basically. Thank you, DJ and Olivia. Absolutely. We have Golden Alice out there, Corey Anderson. Merry Christmas all, says Adam. Thank you, sir. It's great to see you. Tina Borich, she said, I will listen again as I missed a lot of the show. Well, it's all going to be here right on the channel here and also in our member section. Thanks, DJ and Olivia in chat room. You rule. Tim Houston, thank you, sir. It's great to see you out there. The Cat Morpheus. There's more coming, of course, on Northcom and COG as well. But, we're laying out the entire picture here. Hey, Najat Madri says, Merry Christmas, X-Fam. Thank you. Merry Christmas. It's very good to see you. Happy Holidays, DJ and Olivia Roosevelt. Roosevelt, it's great to see you out there, sir. Fantastic. Al Qaeda, excellent. You were excellent on the Alex Jones Show, very professional and well-prepared. Thank you. Yeah, well, it's a great honor to be on Alex's show. What an incredible sort of work that he's done and built there. And I had a great time really bringing that information forward. And we're going to do more. We're going to do more for sure. It's coming up. Jimmy Lyle Kimmerer, it's great to see you out there, sir. Glad to see you're feeling better. Another epic show, Jessica Rodriguez. Jessica, it's great to see you out there. And we're watching out for those drones. If you see anything unusual in those skies, feel free to get in touch with me at admin@darkjournalist.com, and I read all those replies. The ships that photograph as an orb seem to have the ZP energy. Very interesting. On X, really sweet, Fern folks. Yeah, I did. I put up the, I retweeted the entire Alex interview on my X stream. So if you go to Dark Journalists on X Twitter, you'll see it right there. I put it in the newsletter as well. Let's see. Goodbye, chat room. Love you. Bo Krills, yes. Merry Christmas, sir. It's great to see you. Have a fantastic holiday. Karen Carpenter. Woo. Brian Whitaker. Tim Houston, Terry Doherty, Fuber Fighter, the whole gang is here tonight. Excellent. So many of you out there. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Auntie Social, Friday nights are my favorite. Thank you, Auntie. thank you, Daniel and Olivia Wimskirl from Les Scott. And who else we got? Merry Christmas, DJ, plus Ideas Room, and Olivia, OG2420. It's great to see you, sir. Nina says, God bless, Dark Journalist. Olivia Wingsgirl on the best Ideas Room ever. I agree. I'm always saying Thanksgiving for the Ideas Room. Just incredible ideas and people there. And it's great to share so much of this information. I think we have a real synergy that goes on when we do it. Just fantastic. Scarlet Fire, Ray Story, Corey Anderson. Wow. Winter Solstice tomorrow. Capricorn, New Moon. Thank you, T. Oliver. Yeah, we're going to be working a lot on the astrology side in 2025. Watch for a lot of mysticism coming your way. Bo Krills, I catch the whole show tonight. We'll watch again. I have a problem, LOL. Wow. It's great to have you out there. And Renaissance Dude, thanks, DJ and Olivia. Eyes to the skies, indeed. We'll be keeping our eyes open for this. But I do think that the more awareness that we have about these things, the less they're going to be able to pull those types of shenanigans, even if they're rogue groups or it's the entire structure or it's a clash behind the scenes that we can't see on the surface. They're more likely, I would say, to realize that the cat is out of the bag the deeper we go on all this. I am ready for a new moon. Bella's videos. I can appreciate it. Wow. So many great people out there tonight. And the questions were top notch, I have to say. the mystic mindset. Killix. Yes, indeed. You're absolutely correct, sir. Let's see. Who else have we got? Truth is love. I like that. Meow. There's a good one. Bella videos. time to go. Happy holidays all. Indeed. Brenda Fisher. Great to see you. Friday nights are cool again. Isn't that fantastic? All right, everyone. It's been fantastic. Have a happy, happy, Merry Christmas. And we will see you all next week. And then, of course, remember the X series comes back on January 3rd with a major 80th anniversary Casey edition. You won't want to miss it. And we'll keep you. If anything's going on, we'll do special reports. And oh, there's Don Nguyen. Great to see you out there, sir. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why glowing orbs are coming to town. Wow, fantastic. Erica Scales, Indiana Joe. Wow. Merry Christmas, everyone. It's been great, you know, since last Christmas. It's been a fantastic year with you all here, and we really appreciate it. We'll see you all next week. And remember, it says end broadcast, but after all,
never really ends.
It never really ends. And we'll see you all again. Until then, sleep tight.
God bless.